Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I'm going to grab my notebook, bring up the microphone a little closer, and let's get going here. I got the news this morning. And so a friend of mine died of COVID. And it's somebody that, although you never met him, the effects of what he did for us and for a whole lot of other folks are going to be lasting. It's Eric Colley, our webmaster. And so he died sometime, I guess, last week. I just found out. I was talking to him because, ironically, our website is down. So I got to call and find out. I was checking with him. I said, what happened? You know, what's going on? And then his wife contacted me this morning, and they found out that he had passed away of COVID. And this is a bit of a mystery to me. First of all, a little bit of shock. I literally found out, you know, just a little bit before the show started this morning, about half an hour or so before the show started. And so I'm thinking, oh, no, this is strange. I mean, my first reaction is I'm really sorry. And I'm sorry for his wife. And so I'm not going to mention her name just in case, you know, she doesn't know she's being talked about in the radio. But anyway. It's very strange because these folks have a website, you know, jabupdate.com, and they knew what we knew. They knew all the COVID stuff. They knew everything about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. And so, you know, nothing's perfect, you know, this is life. So you do as much as you can, when you can, while you can. And I am eternally grateful to Eric and his wife, who introduced me to him, to have had the experience of working with him, having, you know, been my friend. And I'm frustrated. I'm furious because I think it's probably my greatest reaction is anger, because I know the cures I've been talking about them for 2 years and the treatments and to have something, you know, like this happen, especially when I think, and I don't know the story. I'm just sort of wondering how much I want to get into it simply because, you know, it's their life and I don't want to start questioning everything, but that's where we stand right now. So anyway, our other folks have, our drag racing couple, Cindy Ann Scott and Matt Scott, have had previous commitments. And so we haven't heard from them. I'm waiting for Matt to call in right now. In fact, I might just, text our buddies and see what's, let me see. All right. So I'll tell you a little tribute to Eric. I'm going to play his commercial. I'm going to play it one more time. Maybe I'll play it again, you know, just to let folks know. But this is the guy that created the most amazing version of writeyourlaws.com I've ever seen, more than anything I could have asked for. And I'll tell you a kind of funny story. When we first started doing this, he didn't think this was possible. He's like, Greg, you want to do what? Yeah, I want to have a legislative site. I want to improve the site we've got where people can write bills and we can send them directly to, you know, legislators and media and share them with friends and family. He says, you're going to do what again? It was really, can that be done? I said, yeah, it can be done. We're already doing it. He said, really? Well, let me take a look. So he takes a look and goes, yeah, okay, I guess you are. And this is how it all started. It was back, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, something like that, maybe longer. I'm not sure. We've been working together for a while. And it was amazing to see how this all kind of worked out. And so once he was convinced that he could, he says, well, let me try this. So he's developing, he's doing what all of us do. He's developing things on the spot. And he's just coming up with new ideas. Well, let's try this thing. Like, okay, that looks good. You know, and I'd give Eric a problem. I'd say, I don't know how to do this, but you do. How do I do, you know, whatever it was? And the last thing he did was post all my articles from Canada Free Press. So they're up there too. So the guy's got a tribute. As far as I'm concerned, he's got a lifetime tribute to, you know, and every time I look at writeyourlaws.com, you know, no matter what version it takes, you know, from now into the future, I'll remember that the biggest jump was made by Eric Colley. So let me play you the ad that I made for him, and I'll play it one more time, and I'll check on Matt and see what's going on with our drag racing sports guests. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley,
a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Culley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Well, that's how he did it. The man was a genius. When it came to webmaster stuff, he was a genius. I don't know how he did what he did, but I know I can't do that. And that's the thing about Action Radio. I'm the ideas guy. I mean, that's what I do. And I'm pretty good at implementing a good portion of them, but there are a ton of things I can't do. And of course, one of them is webmaster. That is not my specialty at all. Although I may have to learn how, given the fact that it took so long to find someone as good as Eric to actually do this. So that plus my initial webmaster, the one that put it together, before Eric. And so he's kind of a mystery person too. So I'm not going to name them either. All right. So anyway, so we're kind of, let's go into our second hour stuff. I was going to be talking to Matt and Cindy, and then Cindy had a previous commitment that we're going to get to Matt. Matt was at the Daytona 500, and so I want to talk to him about that. I call it the Sound of Freedom. And so, I am so sorry. I couldn't. See, the mute button's a little hard to reach. Sometimes I miss it. So spontaneous sneeze here. It's actually warm out there, but I got the fan going, so maybe I have to turn that down during another break or something like that. All right. We're a little scared this morning because, again, I'm kind of shocked at the loss of my friend. So this is Action Radio on the fly. Okay, so let's – and like I said, my first report hasn't called in yet too. So that's okay. And we'll continue on as we always do. There's a lot in the news. There's a lot of things happening. And I have a bunch of stories, as always, at the bottom of my computer to talk about that most times I never get to because I'd rather talk to people than, listen to myself talk. CPAC starts today, and that is the Conservative Political Action Conference, Action Committee, Action, whatever it's called. Anyway, CPAC, which is the largest gathering of conservatives, and it would be interesting. I tried to go. I really did, but that's not going to be possible. And there's some kind of holdup. Like I say, the media credentials were not given out. I have another friend that tried to get one. He couldn't get one either. And so I never got to find out if I could teach a workshop there or broadcast from there or even get my credential. So Jonathan Mosley is there, and I've asked him to call in either today or tomorrow. He's a regular report on Thursdays, so see if you can start doing that. So I'm curious what comes out of it. And the conservatives, I mean, I don't call myself a conservative. You don't hear me do – well, occasionally, for convenience I'll say it. But you really don't hear me talking about myself as being a conservative. And the reason is because the conservatives, what to me is the rhinos, the gelding old party, what I'm calling the GOP. And they're not doing what they're supposed to do. I got an article here, which I may or may not get to. Senator Rick Scott says, we've got plans. We've got 12 plans and 12 plans and 114 points? They've got a bunch of plans. And so the Republicans have a bunch of plans. But my question is, are they ever going to implement any of them? And the answer is most likely no. And so the reason I say most likely, 11-point plan with a bunch of other stuff going on to it. So he's got 11. Isn't that nice? It's like the Contract of America under Gingrich, which had 10 points, which they actually did, by the way, as opposed to Rick Scott's 11-point plan, which I doubt anybody's even heard of. And I didn't, just because I happened to look at it in Breitbart. It's like, 11-point plan. Well, that's interesting. But the reason I say they're not going to do anything when they have the majority is they have the majority now. And the Republicans have had a majority for over a month. And they've never declared, for the committee chairs. They haven't proposed a single issue that would counteract Brandon. In fact, all they've done is pass another continuing resolution for another month or so of obscene, irrational, treasonous economic spending. And that's all they're doing. And so the idea that I'm going to vote, first of all, I unregistered after the November 3rd election in 2020, as a protest, thinking, you idiots, you better start fixing this election. When you do, I'll come back. Well, they never did, so I'm not coming back. And the idea that we're supposed to vote for Republicans, and the CPAC is really a Republican-oriented party kind of gathering. And I think that's a mistake, because I think the real activists, the real patriots are not conservatives, because conservatives want to conserve what is. Well, what is an illegal government under Brandon. It's an insurrection. It's a coup. And so if that's what you're conserving, and that's what literally what they are conserving, because Brandon wouldn't be there without Mike Pence and
and Mitch McConnell and, you know, the conservative press and some other things that weren't really, you know, that still call him President Biden, which to me is like an obscenity. You know, say that to me and my skin curls. You know, I get lumps in myself. It's like, because everything in me wants to like throw something. You know, those two words do not go together. President and Biden do not go together. They just don't. They do. It's like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. So I found something interesting. Emerald Robinson had a report. I haven't had time to read all of it. It just came in the email this morning. I can't say her name, but she's my new favorite reporter. Emerald Robinson. I think she went from One American News to Newsmax to, I think she's independent now, or maybe doing Lindell TV. We'll find out. She was one of the folks I was hoping to get at CPAC, quite frankly, and talk to. But she's got a report today about Sean Hannity. And as it turns out, there were some texts that were released by Sean Hannity, you know, and they sent them originally to the Republican. So be careful what you text. I guess anything you text can be saved and, you know, brought out later. But he was texting the Trump White House press office to stop talking about the election, stop talking about the election fraud, you know, just accept Brandon. And I'm reading this, you know, but in a way it's kind of expected because Sean Hannity hasn't said anything new in 10 years. You know, and in fact, Emerald Robinson and everybody else seems to have noticed the same. I stopped listening to him about 5-6 years ago for the simple reason that I've heard this. Everything he says, I've heard before. You know, it's like hit the replay. Oh, Sean Hannity. Okay, I know what he's going to say. I know what he's going to talk about. You know, when he comes on after Tucker Carlson, who I do like because he is new and innovative and actually trying to restore Fox News to a place of original news report. You know, you get as soon as Sean Hannity comes on and says the same old thing. It's like, it's his first sentence. It's like, well, heard that before 3 years ago. Okay, time to go back to One American News. And it's a huge problem. I don't know why they keep him. I mean, I could do his job better at this point. You know, but I won't because A, they're not going to invite me. And B, even if they did, they'd want to restrict what I say. And that's, you know, truth over profit, you know, truth over anything. I'm not going to sacrifice truth just to make a buck, just to get more popular, just to get more famous, because I don't care. This is not what I'm in this for. I'm in this to change the relationship of the citizen and the government. I am not in this to, you know, for fame and fortune. Although I do want a certain amount because I want to get, you know, a 1967 Pontiac Firebird, which I'll talk to our guest Matt about, who's now on the line here. So actually, well, not really guest, reporter for the drag racing team of Cindy Ann Scott and Matt Scott. Let's welcome Matt back to the show. Been a few weeks, sir. How you doing?
Good morning. Sorry, man. We've had the last few crazy few weeks with the babies. Been super sick, and
okay.
So we apologize. It's good to be back. How you guys been?
We've been crazy. I'll give you a little update real quickly. First of all, as I tell anybody that's associated with the show, I mean, family first, take care of your kids. You know, you got your spot here. You know, I want to hear from you. We're going to do some amazing things. And so if you ever have to, you never have to apologize for not being here. That's simply because that's just more important. So let's welcome you back. I finally found my round of applause here. There we go. And as soon as Cindy can come back, we want to do that too. I'm glad you're here though, because I titled the show after you guys, so I didn't want to have to change it afterwards. So this is much better.
Yeah, it's here. It's been crazy, but it's been good. We got a lot of new stuff in the works. I got some guys interested to come on the show. Couldn't make
it
today, but next week for sure. And some interesting stuff coming up. Well, we could go ahead and get into it a little bit. We could talk about as far as the race side, the Daytona 500. Did you watch that at all?
No, I didn't. I was working. I have a massive project right now. I'm working with Jen Clark in Australia. She was on the show Monday for the whole 3 hours. In fact, she got to talk to Dr. Peter Pry about Australia and United States national security. It was really interesting. But we spent 2 hours going over the basic principles of how to structure an Australian Bill of Rights. And so I'm going to try and come up with a first draft and get that down to her. And so that's it kind of in the works. And we talked about it, and then she's going to come back on the show tomorrow. We're going to talk more about it. And this is a big project. You know, I had a press release I just sent out on it. I think Cindy has it as well. And I don't know if I have your email. I can put your email address on there too. But anyway, you guys have that. And so that's huge. And also, we just had yesterday, we had Jennifer Clark calling in from – Jen Clark's in Australia and Canada. It's hysterical. I mean, what are the chances, right? So the one in Ottawa called in yesterday and detailed in painful, excruciating, and emotional detail what's going on in Canada. And so my hope is to be able to work with
the Australians and the Canadians and show them how a citizen legislature can work and how they can actually write the laws they choose to be governed by, especially with Canada, you know, declaring martial law, and the Parliament just voted for it. They just said, okay, great, yep, martial law, yep, sounds good to me. You know, screw the Constitution. You know, it's, we got the power and we're keeping it. You know, truckers blew the horns and they decided to challenge the government. What Canada basically said is you can't challenge the government. Now, so I want to talk about the race in a minute, and I want to talk about the convoy that we have going to Washington. And I also want to talk about another thing on my agenda for today is the competitive shooting world, because there's a natural match between competitive shooters and race drivers, I think. And so this is something that could be explored also as well, you know, in terms of they're bigger on the rights because no one's taking away a right to drive. It is a right to drive, by the way. We'll talk about that someday too. But it's just interesting that any kind of sport that breeds freedom is something that the oppressive state wants to take away because they want you miserable, you know, working, dying, and paying taxes. Not necessarily in that order. Working, paying taxes, and that's how it goes. So let's have some fun. Let's lighten it up a bit. And so the title of the show is Cindy Ann and Matt Scott, Daytona 500, The Sound of Freedom. Take it away, Matt.
So we'll do a little recap. We'll go over, you know, it's crazy because you know how NASCAR is. NASCAR is just a bunch of good old boys
out
there to have a good time.
I don't know how
well,
to
that's
how
it is.
On the show. Tell me.
It's just a good time. They had some live reporters from some TV shows out there interviewing people in the stands.
Uh-huh.
So they're asked, if you have a pass to go on the track, you can assign the finish line before you go to your seat. So the first person they asked on live TV, hey, what did you write in the starting line? He said, F Joe Biden, live on TV. The guy walked away.
He used the F-bomb. We try not to use it here, except under extreme circumstances. But he actually said it?
Correct. I tried it. Yeah. And so the next five people he goes to, everybody says the same thing. So they finally gave up on interviewing.
Oh, that's hysterical. Yes, if they don't get the news they want, they go somewhere else.
They started the biggest chant, they said, in sporting history of an F Joe Biden chant right after the national anthem.
I got to get the video. I got to share that. I want to hear that. I want to hear Americans expressing their...
I'll get it. Okay. And have Cindy send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's classic.
You had 150,000 people in the stands chanting F. Biden.
Uh-huh. And, of course, they're all wearing masks and sitting 6 feet apart, right?
Oh, definitely. All of them. No, but it's cool. About NASCAR, you know, I'm not a big NASCAR fan. I just love the people that like to watch it because they're the people that we like.
Yeah. You're fading in on that a little bit. I don't know if it's the area or you're on a speaker or something. I mean, you just get a little closer to your phone or something, maybe closer to the microphone is. Just I want to get a better signal.
Is that better?
Yeah, but I want you to put your head up to your phone up to your head because it's got too much radiation. I never do it. You know, I always use speaker, but I'll get closer to it. A few inches makes a huge difference in terms of radiation, especially for your kids, too, as they grow up. You know, you don't we're going to do a show on that, too. I've got some gathering information on the dangers of radiation, especially with 5G. So you don't want any towers near where you live. You don't want this radiation we're naturally, you know, acclimated to, like the sun. To a certain extent, until you get sunburned, that's where you're not acclimated. But a certain amount of radiation in our environment, I mean, the cinder blocks have a certain amount of radiation in them. Very, very tiny. I mean, very tiny. But it's there, you know, so we've gotten used to that. But we don't want the extra amount from a cell phone because it can be pretty extreme. Okay, so tell me, let's talk about NASCAR fans because this is America. America, damn it. This is America. You know, I love it. And this is what the elites don't understand. You know, and we did a show on this earlier that the rich kids, you know, that go to Phillips Exeter Academy, you know, that go to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Stanford, you know, the so-called self-proclaimed masters of the world, they don't get it. First of all, they don't have any fun because if they're not ruling over people, you know, they're miserable. All right. And so there's their first fault, you know, thinking that power over other people is a good thing. Is your first mistake, you know, but to get NASCAR fans, they're burger making, beer drinking American, have fun. They work hard. They play hard. You know, they drive the trucks, you know, they make the burgers, you know, they stock the shelves, you know, they run the small businesses, they carry the mail, you know, they do all the things that keep this country going. And the elite people, they look at us as peasants, as serfs, we're their servant class. And they're thinking, oh, yeah. NASCAR, that's a peasant activity. We'd rather watch polo or cricket or something like that, or whatever it is they watch, or play bridge, you know, rich people stuff, right? And, you know, it's just kind of funny that, you know, coming from a fairly wealthy, you know, Canadian family a couple of generations back, it's amazing how fast you can lose it. But anyway, they don't get it. They don't get the fun. They don't get the enjoy. They don't get what it means to be American. They don't get the American dream. They don't get the idea of striving for something great. They don't get the idea of loving your country. They don't get the idea of serving your country because they don't serve anything but themselves. They expect other people to serve them. They simply don't get it. So the idea of F Joe Biden is the most natural thing for Americans at this time to say, knowing damn well that our government was stolen. This is a government chosen by the government. We didn't choose this.
Yep.
And obviously, because nobody would choose the energy prices, you know, the open border. Nobody would choose that. Americans would. You go to NASCAR. Yeah. I bet you if you interviewed any of those 10 people and said, what's wrong with America right now? Well, after F. Joe Biden, it is, you know, list, the list of all the things we just talked about. Anyway, go ahead. Tell me about your
thoughts.
I love it.
Well, yeah. No, that's you hit the nail on the head. And, you know, and going off of that, the funny thing is we went after the race Friday night, Saturday night, we actually went to every year they do a professional bull riding rodeo in Kissimmee, Florida at the Silver Spurs Arena. And we actually went to that on Saturday night to the rodeo, which obviously is another big country redneck event. And the announcer
God bless
guy the
redneck
whole time,
country events. Yeah, go ahead.
The announcer the whole time was, you know, saying, you know, thanks for coming. You know, if anybody from here is from New York, we're going to kindly ask you to go ahead and leave. We don't need your time. I mean, he was just... He had no filter. I wish I would have got it on video because it was amazing. But
maybe somebody did. Maybe there's a YouTube or a Rumble that has it on there. Well, think about that, too. And this is a natural reaction. You know, we say that in Florida. We don't want – you can come to Florida. You can live here, but you can't bring your socialism. You know, you leave the socialism bag at home. Yeah. You know, come here and be Floridians. I did. I came from California. You know, I came here specifically so I could leave California behind. I was not that socialist. When I got to California in the 80s, it wasn't like, I mean, it was always liberal. I can handle liberal, but I can't handle Marxist. And so realizing I was never going to win there, no matter how long I stayed, I came here. Besides, I got a job here. You know, I got my first radio gig full time. So, yeah, so that made a difference. But they don't understand. They don't understand, you know, and what's fascinating is we the people are getting bolder. You know, and now it's not, whereas it would have been, you know, sort of like risky political discussion to be this open, you know, openly defying. I mean, we never really had a reason to do this. You know, as bad as Nguyen was, the process worked and he resigned. You know, he had at least the decency to resign, you know, for his crimes. But nowadays, now the whole administration's a crime and they're shameless about it. And now we're not afraid to say that. And that's a huge change. It's actually a really healthy thing that the announcer did. And, you know, were there any boos or was everybody applauding? I'm guessing everybody was applauding.
Oh, no, everybody. You had everybody standing up, taking their hats off, waving them around. I mean, if you had one person doing it there, they would have been probably hurt. So it was better they didn't say anything.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, Chris, my next question is if you can get the rodeo folks involved. You know, and we need like the Freedom Sports Coalition. We'll get the shooters, we'll get the rodeo, we'll get the racers, the drag racers, the speed track racers. You know, we'll get everybody together in like the Sports Freedom Coalition. And this could be a huge group and something very powerful. You know, because it's something that millions of people love. And if millions of people who love sports say, we're just expressing our freedom, and let's continue that. You know, it's a line it's hard to cross because actors come across into politics sometimes lose all their fans. So it'd be interesting to do it in a way that promotes freedom that doesn't alienate the fans. And that might be an interesting challenge. But putting those groups together could be huge. And we'll get the air racers and we'll get them in too. We'll get the aerobatics and sport pilots. We'll bring them in as well. Look at everybody. Freedom Sports. This would be fun.
I'm sure I can pull some strings and get some people.
Okay. Well, don't rush. You know, we got time. There's no panic. And if you have a guest that's a really special guest, you know, it's good to tell me in advance so I get a little bit of time to research them so I can ask them, you know, all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Usually ones they can't answer. That's kind of my specialty, apparently.
The guy that once is going to come on next week, he owns an energy drink company. And, he actually has his name on the ballot right now in Florida for governor once DeSantos, I don't know. I have to let you explain it to him because he explained it to me at the track on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And the way he did is the most interesting thing I heard. So what I'll do is after the show, I'll text you his name because you can Google his name and see.
Okay.
You can read all about him.
And what's the energy drink company? What's the company?
It's called Red Taz Energy Drink. They're out of Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
They've only been in business for a year and a half. But the guy owned an IndyCar team for 10 years. He owned a Rolex team for another 8 or 10 years. I mean, the guy, he's super into politics, probably on the same level almost as you, I would say.
Oh, good. Well, that's great. But, well, I just, you know, it's been a hobby now. It's my crusade. So, you know, I've been in all sides of politics. But all the time, it's always been fun. It's always been interesting. It's been a game. It's me versus them. Yeah, go ahead.
His story on why he put his name on and how he did it will blow your mind. So, and you can read about it on Google. But it's more interesting for him to tell you. And I talked to him last night. He couldn't come today because he had to go to Miami this morning. But
yeah, no, that's fine. Well, then next week.
Oh, yeah. No, he said next week for sure. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, we've got time. You know, in fact, this is what Action Radio needs more than anything else right now. We need to get the word out on who we are, and we need some folks that, if you choose to, you know, support Action Radio. And that would be huge. But it's never a condition. I never make it a condition of anybody coming on this show that they have to or there's any coercion involved. It's purely, I'll make sure that everybody understands it's voluntary. I'd love the support, but I will never make it a condition of coming on this show. And so I'm just interested in what they're doing. Yeah. He's free to report on all his politics and the good stuff. And I think that the merger of sports and politics and well, you've got a fascist coalition basically running this country right now. You've got a vaccine fascist, you know, media, government, big health, big pharma, unified front, you know, to basically destroy your immune systems. That's what this is all about. In fact, just before you came on, we lost an Action Radio friend, Eric Colley, who's our webmaster. Who created the most, and I went through this earlier in the show, one of those unbelievable websites, writeyourlaws.com, which ironically is down right now. I'm not sure why. I'll have to check that out too. But he did work that, you know, that's, you know, if ever anybody had a monument to greatness and innovation, it's what he did for us for writeyourlaws.com. He has made possible all of us to be able to easily navigate our way through. And anybody, you can know nothing about citizen legislation, and you can read the way that he structured this and be able to write your own legislation and get it to us, and we'll take a look, and then we'll get you on the show, and you can help craft it and share it, and then other people pick it up and share it, and then it gets in the media, then it gets into either Congress or the state legislatures or wherever it goes. But we're totally open. See, the government, unless they ban the Internet, which apparently Senator Paul said they have to do, that's one of those emergency powers back there. But unless they ban the Internet, you know, we don't have to protest. We can do, everybody can do, millions of Americans across this country can lobby from their computer at home. All they have to do is share the links to the bills.
Yeah.
That's why I set this up that way. No protest, no organization. No. You just do your thing. You find a bill you like, send it in, you know. And it's completely decentralized.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's no hierarchy. But I really want to talk to this guy. Now I'm curious. Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
I'll send you his name, and he's definitely going to come on next week. But he's got a lot. And where is he from? I honestly can't remember, but you'll see it when you research him on Google.
Is he American or is he a different nationality?
No, he is. I want to say he's Cuban, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one of our folks that was doing a lot until he got a little bit busy with his PhD work, Anthony Nunez, who wrote several bills for us and used to do a technology and you report, and he also did founding principles. His parents got here on a raft from Cuba. Okay, so we are well versed in Cuban, you know, descendants and Cuban folks coming on the show. So yeah, I mean, if anybody's welcome on the show, it's Cubans, you know. So that's perfect.
Yeah, older
yeah,
than
very
that,
cool.
But that's what I think.
Okay.
But
we shall find out. All right. So we'll go to the rodeo, then back to the race. So do you have that same kind of fascination with rodeos as racing as to why people would sit on a perfectly happy bull until you sit on it? It tries to buck you off. I mean, I know there's an ad circulating on TV now. The most dangerous 8 seconds in sports. This high voice guy. The most dangerous 8 seconds in sports. Maybe you would ride a bull, but I do. The squeaky voice guy is probably one of the bravest people I've ever seen. Hops on a bull. But that's, you know, well, given your choice, would you rather ride a bull or, you know, or drive a race car? I mean, to me, it's easy. What do you think? Where'd you go? You there? Hello? Where'd you go? Where's my guest? Okay, if you have to call back, call back. Where'd my guest go? Hang Well, this isn't fun. Is my show cut out all of a sudden? This is where I need levels. I keep telling Blog Talk, you need levels to find out if I'm broadcasting or not. Yep. Okay. So, all right. So we're still out there. He left for, he might have, well, we'll find out. I'm sure he's going to call right back. So we'll just kind of take this break for a second to play my other commercial. Let's get this energy drink in now before we get a competing energy drink on the show. That might be kind of funny, actually. But let me play this. I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or a 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's W-Y-L. W-Y-L comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Okay, so it looks like the Matt had dropped the caller. He dropped the caller, got into bad air or something like that. So hopefully he'll join us back again here in just a little bit. That's getting interesting. I want to hear about the race. I'll get started on the race when he gets back, because in the next hour I want to talk to you about some of the things I found, especially an article I got from Jan Clark in Australia regarding the United Nations and the Melbourne experiment. And what they're trying to do is relate that to the whole world. And they have something called the Sustainable Development Goals. And this is what really COVID's all about. COVID's a big social experiment. It's a big experiment in government global power. It's an experiment in the deprivation of rights and basically to see how much the globalists can get away with to turn us into their population of serfs, so that we serve them and everything's fine. So as far as they're concerned, as long as they rule everything and we serve them, you know, the world's a great place, you know. But they have, you know, it's always the same thing. You know, everybody wants to rule the world. What is that? Which group did that song? Anyways, but that's the thing. Everybody wants to rule the world, and that's the problem. If you desire power, you should be disqualified from having it. You know, that's all. There he's back. Okay, good. So let's get Matt back on the air here. So I just played the energy company. We have actually an affiliation with Strikeforce. So I'm going to make sure that we don't have conflicting energy company ads. You know, when you have one of your guests on, that would be kind of bad.
Yeah.
So welcome back, Matt.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Oh, sorry, I lost you there.
That's okay. I'm not sure where you left me, but you know, do you have a fascination with rodeos too? In other words, would you hop on a bull? Or are you happier just being in race world?
No, I would do it 100%.
Okay.
Cindy probably wouldn't let me, but.
Oh yeah, see, that's your mate. See, yeah, I'm a single guy. I can do what I want. I don't have to say yes, dear. But that's another story. I did for a while, but I can't recommend it. Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know if she'd let me. I'd love to, but.
Well, do they have like a camp, you know, like a shooting range? You can go take a lesson. Can people take rodeo lessons? I mean, can you try like a smaller bull, you know, a smaller bucking bronco?
Yeah, they do.
They
do. They do. They start off on calves and they move up from there. They'll start out on little broncs and they have all those different. They don't just throw you on a big bull and tell you to hold on and hope for the best.
Well, they probably have the electric bull. I mean, are those more for fun or are those actually training devices?
No, those are just for fun. That's something you go to the fair and ride just to have fun.
Oh, okay. That's just applicable.
They have those at some of the local country bars in our town here.
Yeah, well, I give it a shot. I actually, I was in Florida on a spring break trip, and when jet skis first came out, those are the ones you used to stand on. I actually did that.
Yeah.
And the vibrations caused my legs to be so weak that when I tried riding an electric bull, you know, a couple hours later, I still couldn't move. I still had no leg power, none of my normal, you know, muscle power. And I got thrown off really fast. And everybody's looking at me, what a wuss. So you get thrown off that fast? I said, I was on a jet ski. Uh-huh. Sure, Greg. Anyway, let's leave rodeos and get to the race, because I want to know, you know, the thing about racing, and I saw it once when I was a kid up in Toronto, a place called Mosport. Stands for motorsport, and just the sound, the smell, the gasoline fumes, the burning rubber, the barbecue, the you know, whatever fuel you're using, the you know, methyl ethyl tributyl, you know, nitrous concoction that you guys come up with. There's something about racing that's just, you know, it's a total experience. So put us at Daytona.
Oh yeah,
what was it like?
Daytona is a, you know, you have two different. You have your people that'll be there for, because Daytona has a whole thing. It's called Speed Weeks, so it starts from one Saturday and ends on that Sunday for the Daytona 500. So you'll have the people that go there and camp out in the infield for the whole week, and it's one gigantic party. And it's the same thing as in the stands. You know, you have your people that just come for the weekend. They sit in the stands
For the weekend.
But, you know, you'll have for the whole weekend. Yeah. Because there's races every day of the week, starting on Monday of last. Uh-huh. There was races every single day of the week up until the 500.
Wow!
So there's an event going on every day. yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's you know, seeing the races from the stands is one thing, but you'll have to, next time you talk to Cindy, ask her. When I actually worked at Daytona, when I worked for NASCAR, you know, we were allowed to go places where only the drivers and their families and certain media could go. So we would be on the pit road, walking by the drivers, watching the race from pit road. And that's a whole experience in itself.
Oh, I'd do it. I'd do it in a second. I'd love to. I'd just to talk to the drivers. And, you know, I wouldn't want to do a lot of filming at the time. I want them to do their thing. And I'll just talk about it on the show. But, yes, absolutely. Next Daytona, I would love to be there. That would be fabulous.
Yeah.
I'll bring a lot of sunscreen.
They have that race.
Big hat.
They have that race and then the Coke Zero 400 race, which they do every 4th of July week.
Okay.
So that's another big race as well. The Daytona 500 actually sold out for the first time a month before tickets were on pre-sale for the first time since 2012. Completely sold out.
Are these loyal fans that come year after year generally?
Most of them, yeah. Yeah, you have people that have – I know when I worked there and I when I started off and I started them in their sales department, which was their call center, when you did renewals of the tickets – I mean, you have people that that same weekend before they leave Daytona, they'll renew the tickets for the next year.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of these people you have coming there are people that have been coming there for years and years and years, and they're the same. You get new people, but it's mostly all the same people. And all the
and
people,
you have families. You'd have generations. You know, you'd have grandparents
and
kids. Yeah. Interesting.
Yep, and then you have a lot, like in the infield, you have a lot of people that camp on the infield. And they've met people over the years, and now after the next year comes, they're all camping together on the infield.
Oh, wow.
You
know,
so
unfortunately,
definitely,
I was going to say it's warm enough, but the sun isn't strong enough yet, so sunburn, which is always a consideration, especially I had skin cancer years ago, caught it early, no problem.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's still there. You know, you still worry about that, but I always worry about when I see open air events, especially sometime, is the fact that sunburn can be fatal. You know, people don't not right away, but you know, years later. And so I'm just hoping that that'd be something for the racing crowd to do, is to say, you know, make sure, you know, have your sunscreen, wear your cover, you know, get the hats and things like that. And that's not going to detract from the race. Believe me, you'll see it and smell the race. It'll be right there. But that's always a consideration.
Yeah.
But in February, it's not as big a deal.
You always see a lot of fried people there. And actually, this is the first Daytona 500. I think they said in what, 5 years, that it wasn't cold. Every 500 for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been you know, in the 40s, and this was the first year. It was actually in the 80s.
Oh, really? That's interesting. And people still camp out in the 40s. They don't care. They're just there. They're there.
No,
they're at the race.
No, because most of them are from up north anyway. So
Oh, the snowbirds. Now, isn't that interesting? Because I don't know of any. I think Sebring, is that in New York? You know, we should do a little racing guide around the country. How many Northeast liberal states have speedways?
I honestly couldn't answer that. Something I have to look up.
Okay, well, do for next week.
Sebring, there's a Sebring Raceway in South Florida.
Then there's one up north somewhere. I've forgotten where. I know there's some kind of speedway.
Yeah.
I know we
and
had one in
be.
The yeah. Napa has one in the San Francisco Bay Area. And it gets named after AT&T or something like that. But I know there's a speedway up there. It's both a drag race and it's more of a motocross track. It has like the curbs and the hills and the whole bit. Now, something about the NASCAR race, the Daytona 500, that's just a big oval or a big circle.
Correct.
And everybody goes around
a bunch
to the left.
A bunch of left turns.
Yeah.
Yep, bunch of left turns.
So, and this is what's always fascinating me, is people will watch a 500-mile race in a circle. Everybody going, everybody making left turns, and yet they're still there year after year after year. To me, I mean, I'm more, I want to sound like an auto racing snob here, but when I was in Europe, I spent a couple months bumming around Europe after college, and I actually walked the race course in Monte Carlo. So I spent a day in Monte Carlo, gambled at the casino. I won enough for a fabulous dinner, actually. That's kind of unusual. But I walked the course. I walked that tunnel. I walked the streets. And it's a fascinating race course, but it's a challenge. And you look how wide these lanes are. And they're not that wide. And these you know, cars are doing 100-plus miles an hour on these back streets of Monaco. But the thing is, it's turns, it's twists, it's hills. You got to slow down to like 5 miles an hour at one point, up to 120 in another place. It's a challenge, but there's something about, I don't know, what's the attraction to everybody going around in a circle? And I don't want to sound like, you know, Greg, what's your, you know, how come you don't get it? Well, help me understand.
I never got it either. I'm not a big NASCAR fan. I did it because being able to do what I did for them when I did it. I'm not a big fan of watching cars going left turns for 250 laps. I think it's more of people just getting together, and it's one big party and just one big drinking fest, really, is all it is. I mean,
spring break for adults.
that's exactly what it is. That's not a lie. I mean,
does anybody have bumper stickers? You know, my baby conceived at Daytona. Listen,
there's some crazy stuff you see out there. There's guys in their campers that will have tents set up, and they're passing out shots to people, passing out beers to people. You got people with little kid pools set up in front of their $500,000 motorhome, and there's a bunch of people swimming in it. I mean, it is. If you've never seen anything like that, it will blow your mind. I'm used to it because that's just the stuff that I've grown up doing. But for people that haven't, you're going to be like, "What is wrong with these people?"
Well, no, because all they see is the race. They see cars going around a circle. This is why I wanted to have you on to talk about this, because the race, yeah, it's the race, but you know, it's like why do the British watch cricket? Well, they're not watching cricket. They're going to tea. They're having, you know, festivals. They're getting, you know, whatever luxurious, you know, aperitifs and appetizers and, you know, champignons or whatever, or those canapes or whatever they're called. But there's more to it. It's not just a race.
Right. Well, and then for the people on the infield, you have to think, when you're in a camper on the infield, that track is huge. It's a 2.5 mile or 2 mile track. So you're not going to see much from your camper. Those people are there more just to hang out and see the people they haven't saw in years and party and watch a little bit of the race that they can, you know, and they're the diehard fans too, but they're the ones that are there more just for their, you could say, as a vacation. Then you got the people in the stands, you know, that are really there, that die-hard race car fans that want to be able to see the whole track and the whole race. And, you know, they have their shirts on that have the driver on and that they like, and, you know, there's two different sides to it when it comes to that.
How about gambling?
Cindy must be listening what with the baby, because I'm getting texts to my watch that I can't respond to.
Yeah, Cindy, hold off, we're busy, we're doing a radio show, this is live radio, you know, when on the podcast. I'll tell her to call in if she has I don't mind.
I think the baby was having a little rough morning when I left this morning, so
I'm sorry. Yeah,
that's why she didn't come on. He's been better, but yeah, she just texted. I got on my watch. She said, "Yes, I am."
You will good. Hi, Cindy. Let's give a shout out to Cindy.
You know,
the dynamic racing duo. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
The racing worlds are all different, though. You know, because you go from NASCAR, and then you go out to what we do to say drag races. It's two different worlds, you know. You go to a NASCAR race, you got a bunch of these guys that are just about that. Well, you go out to a drag strip, and you have all diversities of people that are there racing all different cars. you know, from a Honda Civic to a you know, Ferrari, say. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay, so now NASCAR, do they standardize their cars? Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good thing for us to get into. Do they kind of equalize anything, weight, power? What do they do? What kind of restrictions are the cars under at NASCAR?
And that's all changed, too, now. They just went this year to a new gen car, that, and they all have plate restrictions and all sorts of restrictions. And they actually don't race NASCAR how they used to anymore. They used to run the whole 250 laps.
Right.
You know, with throwing caution flags or whatever. Now they do it in stages because they're trying to make it, I don't know, more
safe,
eco-friendly, and more diverse.
Race equity. Do the minority drivers stand up front? Can you put the white guys in the back? I'm sorry to be that blatant, but this is like the leftist dream. We're going to now have race equity. We're now going to put the minority drivers in the front, and we're going to put the white drivers in the back.
Yeah.
That's a joke, folks. Okay, I'm kidding.
Well, they'll do three stages. So instead of running a whole race, they'll do, you know, 50 laps on the first stage, then they'll run a second stage, then they'll do a third stage. And it's just, it's definitely not the way it used to be. And the little bit that I used to like it, I definitely don't like it anymore, the way that they changed the sport. But
people
still love it. So
NASCAR.
NASCAR.
Was there any pressure to change it?
Oh, for sure.
From where? Who would want to change NASCAR?
Once all this stuff started, you know, years ago with all the stuff going on, is when they really started changing, because they have a guy, it all kind of started right too before their Bubba Wallace driver, which he's mixed, I'd say. So year before last, during the Daytona 500, somebody put a noose in his garage at the track.
Now, was that done by him? Was it staged like a Jussie Smollett thing, or is this a genuine? Is this a genuine thing?
Everybody thinks it was staged because nobody has access to those garages besides the family, the pit crews, and very little stations and people that have the right credentials.
Mm-hmm.
So that turned into a huge, huge thing. But even before that, right before that, they're starting to try to get everything changed to the more eco-friendly. And when there was, you know, it was kind of really after the whole Dale Earnhardt thing, I want to say, when he died, they're trying to make everything safer. So they're trying to slow the race down, which doesn't help for fans because they're there to see the action. They don't want to see somebody do 50 laps and then they're off for 20 minutes taking a break and going back. There's no action that's going to occur like it usually does during a whole 250 straight lap race, if that makes sense.
No, I'm really disgusted, quite honestly. And I don't know, what you should tell us a little bit about what happened to Dale Earnhardt. I mean, I like racing. I don't follow this much because I can't watch cars go around a track or an oval track. If I'm going to watch a race, quite honestly, it's going to be a Grand Prix race. It's going to be with twists and turns and dives, and especially if it's in a city, because that to me is much more exciting. We are neutering our population. We are you know, castrating our fans emotionally. You know, and you think about what's going on. The idea of taking a race. This is a race. This is, you know, and you want to see danger. Look at the old pictures. Look at the races in the 1920s and 30s. You know, these open air cars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where they sat up high. When they rolled over, they all died. Okay, now was that a good thing? No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying was that racing forged ahead. Things that are dangerous are not necessarily bad. Like a little bit in the background noise. You got something? Are you in a place where there's other?
I must be my radio. There we go.
You turn the radio off. Okay, good. You're on the radio, dude. You're on the radio. You don't need the radio.
But you know what's funny is, if you don't know, you know, NASCAR started on Daytona Beach. That's where they first held their race at.
On the beach? Oh wow.
On the beach.
Yeah, I ended up on Daytona Beach. Now this is another embarrassing story from my misspent youth, but I went down for spring break and with some fraternity brothers, and I actually ended up on the beach. And I woke up on the beach. I don't remember driving onto the beach. All I remember is waking up, you know, with my face full of sand, and I'm on the beach, and there's my car beside me. I'm like, what the, you know what? How did I get here? Anyway, but that was my misspent youth. We're not going to talk about that anymore.
But this is with Florida's freedom. Florida, you know, Florida's like, you know, California used to be. I got Pianki in the line. Pianki, I'll get right to you. But Florida, you know, represents the two free states, the states where you do stuff. Well, I say Texas too, but it's different. I've driven through Texas. Texas is wide open spaces and nothing. And they don't have the big beach culture. But a beach culture is really a free culture. Like in California, you know, when they used to surf and then, like, go for pizza in the afternoon. And then when the tide came back in, like, it was totally awesome. They'd go surfing again. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was great. That was fun. That was a good time. You know, I used to go wine tasting in the wintertime when none of the tourists were around. It was great. But California used to be freedom. That's why people went there. You know, from the summer of love on, that California is a land of opportunity. Is you know, in fact, ever since World War II, California was the place to go. And then they lost it. They became socialist. They became too impressed with their own, you know, self-worth. And then, of course, Florida has always been a playground, too. You know, the snowbirds come down. You know, well, we're not going to survive winter. We're rich enough. We don't have to, you know, we can pay for our summertime. This is go down to Florida. And it was fun. It was exciting. It was interesting. And young folks love Florida. And spring break was a total passion. Then they took that away. And everything is, you know, I really feel sorry for kids because so much of what we did for fun has been taken away. Now, was it always safe? No. In fact, it was downright dangerous.
Right.
That was part of the attraction.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people are attracted to dangerous things and master them. You know, do we shoot guns because they're perfectly safe? No, we shoot guns for the responsibility of handling something that is potentially, you know, able to take a life, and we do it in a responsible way. That's part of the attraction. Yeah. That's part of the challenge. The challenge of a driver is to be so good you can take a hunk of metal whipping around a track with a bunch of other people in the same hunks of metal at a ridiculous rate of speed on an oval track and survive it and win and beat the other ones. That's the attraction. But that's human nature.
Right.
You know, this goes back to the gladiators and the chariot race. Did you ever see Ben-Hur? Ben-Hur in the chariot race? That was rigged, but, you know, because we knew who was going to win that one. But the chariot races. I mean, the human being has always wanted challenge and competition and always wanted to have somebody to support and watch people do really dangerous, crazy things, you know, because thank God I'm not going to do that. I got my hot dog and I'm here. I'm happy. I got my beer. You know, I'm not going to do that, but I'm glad they are. You know, I mean, it's a vicarious thrill that people love. Anyway, let's get Pianki. I want to get his view on Daytona and racing in general and maybe my misspent youth too. Pianki, you've got Matt Scott on the line with you here and part of the great racing team of Matt and Cindy Ann Scott drag racing team. And this is the Race Report. Pianki.
I don't watch the races no more because they've done away with my favorite charger, General Lee.
So, oh, no. Was that the Dukes of Hazzard car? Was that actually a real car in a race? Matt, was it Lee Racing, an old Dodge?
You can't find them no place anymore.
Oh, so
you know, and actually,
go ahead, Matt.
There's a guy over here that goes to a lot of the cars and coffees that we do that actually has an original General Lee car, and I'll have to send you some pictures of that as well. But
yeah,
well,
we
know,
need
that car's,
to take
that
pictures,
car's racist.
Them.
That car's racist. That's why they can't have it anymore. General Lee, you know, one of our greatest generals.
Well, let me ask you something.
Go ahead.
If that's racist, when Melania Trump make donations, the organizations don't want to take her because of who she is rather than what it is. Now, if that's not racist, what do you call it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know it's shocking, isn't it?
Well,
you have to think about this for a little bit.
Well, Pianki, what do you know about this incident? I've forgotten the race driver's name who says that a noose was found in his garage. Do you know more about that story? Because I'm sort of familiar, but not really.
It wasn't a noose. It was the pull rope that's used to pull down garage door.
Yep, that's right. And they were trying to turn it into it was a noose. Instance is what it was. That's right. And they're trying to say that it was somebody, but as I was telling you before, access to those garages is nearly impossible unless you're a driver, pit crew, family member, or a news reporter that has the hot pass credential. That's the only way you're getting in there. So they're trying to blame it on another pit crew. Somebody did it for fun or funny, but I think, like I told you, it was staged, to be honest, because he was the only, as you could say, black racer in NASCAR, which he's not technically all the way black. He's mixed, but that's another story.
Well, but has there ever been a previous, I mean, NASCAR, you don't care who's driving. You're in a car. It doesn't matter who's driving. You know, skin color is irrelevant to driving. I mean, obviously, and that's the nice thing about a race is it's a great equalizer. You know, you don't win because you're black. You don't lose because you're black. You win or lose or white. You win or lose based on whether you can get around the track fastest.
So it's a great equalizer in terms of that.
Bubba Wallace's team is owned by Michael Jordan, just a little FYI.
Oh, that's interesting. What did Michael Jordan say about it? Michael Jordan always struck me as a reasonable person, everything I've heard about him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember that far as comments from him, but I do remember that he does own that Bubba Wallace's.
Is he still racing, Bubba Wallace?
Bubba Wallace? Yeah, he finished second in the – he actually finished second this past Daytona 500.
Oh, really? Well, there's racism for you. He should have been – I'm just kidding. Don't mind me. But in other words, he got there on his own merit. He drove second best in the race, which is just a huge accomplishment. It's like a silver medal in the Olympics. That's a good thing. So he really has nothing to complain about. Okay. Yeah. I see.
Well, you know, you make a good point. The man is mixed. And I think he's representative of both sides of his genetic makeup, his father and his mother. And it's always that the one side is really not his is not his family, but you got this one side out here that wants to hijack and claim everything that's not Lily White.
Well, it's interesting. We live in a nation where white people don't want to be white because it's cooler. It's better for jobs. You know, it's better for scholarships and grades and SAT tests. And just in general, if you want to be, especially if you're on the left, if you want to be cool, you can't be white. Because that's the oppressor. That's the evil one. That's the, you know, white people represent everything that's wrong with America. You know, although try having an America without, you know, the white guys that wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know, the Constitution and fought the war against Britain. I mean, try having a country without white people. Ain't going to happen. You know, so, but to do this now and to break everything down by race, mixed race people, I think, actually in many ways are a solution to this problem. Because, you know, you're still talking about a human being. You're talking about an individual, and the fact that they have, you know, different races ancestry, you know, it's like different national ancestry. It sort of dilutes the argument because, you know, if you're black but you're not black, you're white but you're not white, you know, does it really matter what you are? And this is why I've never liked racial classifications. But I see the impact of, and as we get progressively more people of mixed multiple races, because now the mixed race people, they're going to have kids in the next generation. So you might have a black and white person with an Asian and Native American person. Now what are you?
Well, we had a guest on yesterday who almost got killed because he's white and his girlfriend was black. Remember?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, Rick from New Jersey
who's
called
the racist?
Well, the racists were the eight black guys from the gang. I guess he said they were the Bloods. So I guess the Bloods have an operation in, it was at Roseville, New Jersey or something like that. Yeah. I mean, you should definitely get that story to Oh, yeah. Yeah, Matt, if you ever get a chance, go back to our shows. This week has been unbelievable in terms of, you know, our contacts with Australia. We have two Jen Clarks. We have a Jen Clark in Australia and Jennifer Clark in Canada. Jen Clark Australia was on Monday. Jen Clark from Canada was on yesterday. We've got you now talking about racing. And it's interesting that these issues, as fun as racing is, there is a political context to it. You know, there is something, you know, behind it. To me, this represents freedom. And I think this is why you're seeing the eco-Nazis coming after you guys. And I was wondering about that. Are they restricting your cars? Do you have to use – and what's going to happen, you know, is Brandon telling you that you have to race electric cars by 2030? You know, what kind of stupid restrictions are being put on you guys? I'm just curious.
Well, nothing as far as our side. You know, NASCAR has become totally political, obviously, because of the people behind it. You know, the Frances were one of the biggest names around because they're the ones that started – the whole thing. And, you know, that's one of the – NASCAR, I think, is the second biggest sport in the world,
really?
I'm correct, which I'm pretty sure I am. So they became political because a lot of the sponsors, they lost a lot of sponsors because of everything that was going on. A lot of big-name sponsors, too, you know, had dropped. So they're obviously huge. As far as the side that we do, you know, we haven't seen anything yet, and I highly doubt we will, which, you know, it's – NHRA is as big as NASCAR, but not as big, I guess, if that makes sense.
What's that stand for, NHRA? What's that?
National Hot Rod Association.
Okay. Thanks, Bianchi.
Yeah.
Bianchi knows everything. What I don't know, he knows. It works out great.
But – you know, and it's a big sport too. But you know, you have a lot more people out there, I think, that watch NASCAR than they do drag racing, and they're two different worlds. Like I said, you go out, you have a diversity of cars in the drag world, When you go to a NASCAR race, now you have a few Fords, a few Chevys, and now these new next-gen cars. I haven't even looked into it yet, and I honestly don't even – they have one big lug nut now instead of – it's a whole
– in the wheel, one big lug nut? That's it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They changed everything. There's more eco-friendly, more –
It's a drag race. It's supposed to burn fuel. It's not supposed to be efficient. We're pushing the bounds of technology here. You know, that's like saying, well, the next rocket that goes up, well, we can't send it up unless it's 10% more efficient. Let's put ethanol in the rocket fuel. Let's see if it works better. Give me an effing break. I mean, you think about it. What with these people? What is it? And this goes to our culture, too. And I'm curious Bianchi's view on this, too. Racing is on the extreme edge of technology. That's why we have racing. Racing is not only to watch the thrill of victory and all that kind of stuff, but it is. This is your end of it, Matt. This is what you do. You're the designer, builder, maintenance person. You're the one that actually has to work with all this stuff. You know, you are on the cutting edge of technology. It starts in the race world. You know, and it's either military or sports. That's where most of our technology comes from. You know, medicine comes from wars. You know, look at the Civil War. And amazing amounts of medical knowledge were gained during the most extreme conditions. Yeah, and that's what you do. You test things under the most extreme conditions. The most extreme is the fastest you can go. Let's see what happens when you're going the fastest that you can go. You know, and so it's supposed to. So the idea of eco-friendly, you know, you can put the eco stuff on later. You know, when it comes to production cars, if you want to have, you know, more efficient, you know, better ways of doing things, you're going to find that out. Because if you're squeezing the maximum power out of the fuel that's available, you can transfer that technology immediately to getting the most that you can out of your fuel in your production car, but you're using it in a different way, using it around town, using it in the highway, you know, things like that. But all these technologies are directly transferable. You should be in a tax break for racing. You know, in fact, if you want to write a bill on that, you know, call it the technology advancement tax credit. Would you like that?
Yeah.
Cindy, write that down.
I had a
Cindy's listening. Cindy's wife's listening.
I had a friend. Cindy,
write that down. Technology advancement tax credit. Go ahead, Bianchi.
I had two of my best shops. One was Dawson Engineer, where he made rakes, and I show you a car to know what a rake is. Another shop where they made drag racing motorcycles. We used to travel to Kansas City, down to Atlanta. We used to ride our bikes down for the motorcycle drag races. And then in Illinois, and I can't, Raceway International to watch the cars and the rakes go down the stretch. And I had not a neighbor, but I knew of a superintendent, called construction superintendent, whose son built a car they would take out to the Bonneville flats. So it's a very, very inspiring and fun sport, whether you're on a motorcycle or whether you're on an automobile.
Hey, we got company. Let's get the other half of the Matt and Cindy Ann racing team. Cindy Ann's on the line here, so I'm going to make her live and welcome her to the show. So have you been listening and taking notes? Any comments, Cindy?
Yeah, I have.
Matt's reaction.
Yeah, first of all, the NHRA stands for the National Hot Rod Association. Hot rods, you know, are race fuel, you know, injected cars. They're not electric. And people don't associate hot rods and electric together. That's one of my
Tesla.
Biggest things is when we go, Tesla does have a 9-second drag car, the Tesla Plaid, and that is electric. It's got two batteries. It runs on, you know, some cheetah programming or whatever it's called. But even that, you know, it's still not, when you go to the racetrack, you want to smell the fuel. You want to, you know, smell the burning tires and stuff like that. That's just part of the experience of it. But when you think hot rod, you don't think electric. The two just don't go together for me.
No, I actually agree. I think electric should be in a whole separate race. I want to get back to Bianchi's comment, though, because he's talking about, you know, in his childhood and his misspent youth, too. We all have one. But watching the races, being able to grow up watching races. I want to go to Matt and then Cindy on that. Bianchi, did you have anything further on that? Go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to just jump on his point real fast. He was talking about going to the races to watch, you know, the cars and the bikes and how diverse. It's even more diverse now. They're racing at the track at Orlando Speed World where we go. They have drag four-wheelers.
Wow.
Not only four-wheelers.
ATVs?
But now they
what
have
are those?
Yes.
All-terrain vehicles or what?
The four,
really?
A four-wheeler that you ride out in the dirt. They have drag mm-hmm. tires on them, and they're drag racing them down the track.
How fast mm-hmm. are they going?
Scooters. They have scooters that run the 8 mile in 9 seconds. A scooter that
okay.
has drag bars on them.
Oh, my God.
Scooters are going about 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Down you know what was really weird back
ahead,
in those
Andy.
Days? When Andy okay. Granatelli came out with his STP turbine. Remember that?
I do not.
My goodness. You guys, were you just born last week or what?
We've got youngins on the show. It's okay, Pianchi. That's all the guys. We have
my goodness, I'm
hey, that's okay. Pianchi remembers
remember,
the Stanley
you
Steamer.
You don't remember
so,
Andy
know.
Granatelli? Hydrogen turbine car that was beating everybody.
Oh, oh, oh yes, 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 yes. My dad used to comment on it all the time. Yes, I do remember.
I there guess. You go.
My dad used to comment, and he would get so frustrated about it all the time.
Why?
He was with John. He was with John Force. That's when that originally started. Am I correct? The John Force error.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm not that old, but I do remember that era as far as I'm pretty sure that was the John Force when that whole started, which that guy is like 105 and he's still racing.
What? Well, that's encouraging. Maybe I can still
he's
get
that
radio.
He's not that old. It's a joke. It's a joke, yeah. But he's old. He's up there.
Well, that's is there an age limit where you have to start this, or do you just kind of self-limit and just say, you know what, I really don't have the same judgment
no.
I had at 32? Yeah. Okay.
No, when you go
no.
out to the drag strip, there is a big diverse age difference, and you got okay. there's guys out there. I'm in my 40s, and mm-hmm. there's guys out there 60s. I raced against a 75-year-old who just overcame cancer.
Wow.
So, like, yeah, there's no age limit. There's no age gap.
You got a pet bird, don't you?
No, I'm sitting on my porch because the baby's asleep.
Okay. Yeah, I hear birdies. We do this with Alan Dawson when he calls in from Belize. He always says he's tropical birds in the background. It's really kind of funny. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, everything gets picked up by the microphone. It's kind of fun. Well, yeah, you know, fresh air, good thing. Thanks for calling in, Cindy, too, because I know you have you're busy this morning, too, and Matt as well. I really appreciate you guys coming here. So anytime, like I say, you have to miss a show, don't worry. We'll get it the next week. Pianchi, did you have anything further on this? Because I'm fascinated with racing then and racing now. It's better
well,
worse
you know,
now.
Those good old days. They used to race the triple-engine Harleys, and on the track, motorcycle track race, the BMWs used to always win, and came playing with the Ducatis and the Triumphs. Mm-hmm. So, and then on the drag racing, up came the Japan's Kawasaki's, and it was a hell of a time back then.
You know what's interesting back then, too, is that although, I mean, the first Earth Day was 1970, people were concerned with pollution. You know, we did want a better environment. There was a river in Ohio that actually did catch fire because of all the petroleum, you know, waste products that were in it. So that's a real thing. But the thing is, I think we were more reasonable about it. You know, in other words, we said, yes, let's clean up the cars. Let's make the engines better. But we're not going to, what California does, stress everybody out, you know, making sure that they test them. Now you have to pass. I had a 1987 Toyota that I drove for years and years. And I almost had to get rid of it because it's, you know, at a time when I didn't have a whole lot of money. But the thing, and this lower income people are more affected by this, but California sets the standard. You have to, your car has to pass when it was new to the same standards as when it was new. Well, if you had a car made in the 80s, you know, because you're poor and, you know, and it's an old Toyota and they actually lasted that long. My car lasted over 400,000 miles. But the thing was that, you know, these standards were so extreme that you could, you know, they used the environmental standards to get rid of all the cars they don't want. You know, and so we understood, though, that reasonable, not those laws, but reasonable laws on the manufacturers to make a cleaner engine. That's a good thing for the environment. But the thing is that you consider the overall use of cars. You know, there's more fuel burnt on a commute in any major city in this country than you guys, probably all the racing world, use in a year. You know, so it's a small, or maybe not, I don't know. Maybe you guys do burn a lot of fuel. But the point
we
is,
we use a lot of fuel.
Yeah, but I mean, compared to a city commute, you've got, you know, maybe 2 or 3 million. Say the Bay Area has 9 million people. Let's say a third of those are going to work. You got 3 million cars. You got 3 million cars driving for an hour because the commutes are huge now. 3 million cars burning fuel for an hour. That's a lot of fuel. That's at least, let's say, I don't know, there and back, 10 gallons. you know, by the time they're done with all the delays and stuff, that's a lot of fuel. You know,
on the
track,
we always go out there with a quarter tank because, you know, you don't want to have a heavy tank that's going to slow you down. So we usually have a half a tank. And about two passes, I have to refuel. More horsepower means more fuel.
But the thing is, but your use of fuel in your one car or even the total amount of dragsters and racing cars in this country is minuscule compared to the overall trucks and cars that are on the road today. It's not even close. So what I'm saying is that we used to understand that racing is an exception to the overall manufacturing production role. We want you to be able to go as fast as you can. We want that technology. We want you to push the boundaries. We're really happy that you want to do that because what you do makes our cars better. What you do creates the technology that advances, you know, everything from ways that engines are produced, the actual engines themselves, you know, fuel efficiency, the whole bit. That's all done. Most of that's done, I believe, through racing. And so because of what you do, it doesn't make any sense to put the environmental restrictions on ahead of time until we know what you can do. And once we know what you can do, then we can translate that into regulations for production cars. But to limit you guys with any kind of stupid stuff that may be coming down the line, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me because this is freedom. This is freedom, literally freedom in motion. The freedom to move as fast as you possibly can, you know, I believe is, you know, although it's not stated, but that's part of our rights. We need to be able to have that freedom to go as fast as we possibly can to know how fast we can go. That's why you're on the show. Matt, Cindy?
Yeah, but, you know, racing was a good family activity. Everybody on Friday, you racing to get home, to get into your trailer. It was packed on Thursday with all the food and the barbecue of briquettes. You go out to the races. You start Saturday and it ends on Sunday. Then you go back and start all over again, working from Monday to Friday. You do it again. Man, that was life.
Matt, Cindy?
And that's pretty much how it still is now. I mean, you know, a race weekend starts on a Friday and ends on a Sunday. And then you work all week. You work all week to get the car ready. You go Friday to the track. You're done on Sunday. And you get everybody out there. Everybody's got their tents out. They got their grills. You know, it's still like that. And it's even more now so, though. And it's even bigger because now you have all these guys that have all these as I call rice beater cars, these little Honda Civics, and that racing world is huge. Those guys put their every dime, life, time, everything into those things. And that side of racing, I guess the Puerto Rican side where they come out, you know, that side trumps us tenfold. I mean, it's insane.
You know, it's funny you should say that. It's interesting the term rice burner. I mean, I heard that applied to Asian motorcycles like Hondas and Kawasaki's and Suzuki's and things like that. It's kind of, and I know it's a term of endearment coming from you guys, but I know someone's going to say, "Oh, I can't believe they said rice burner." You know, I mean, what do they call your cars? Grain burners? You know, what's the difference? Ethanol, nitrous, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of funny.
Sorry about my comment, everybody.
No, that's okay.
Your Honda Civics.
There you go. You're free to say it here.
I call it that because you know what? I don't know what else to call them. I've been calling that ever since I was a kid. That's what they were. They make I don't know. Okay.
That's okay. No, don't worry about it. We're pretty free and open here.
They were long grain rice burners.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of funny. You know, unless they see
your
cars run
on
crackers,
too.
But you know that's another story. Good, Bianchi.
Yeah. We used to fly up north to Oshkosh, and down there in Florida, they have Sun and Fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Sun and Fun. They still have that great. Yeah, they still have Sun and Fun for those who were airplane enthusiasts. So America has a variety of ways of being family and having fun until all of a sudden these Democrats just went crazy with that stuff. They want to stop everything.
Yeah, I actually went to Sun and Fun when my book came out back in the 90s. I actually flew down there and was at their author's table. It didn't work out well because AOPA didn't like my book because I challenged their orthodoxy. Don't say orthodoxy. Don't come up with new ideas. You know, same thing in radio. Don't have new ideas. There's no new ideas allowed in radio. That's why I had to do this independently. But getting back to this whole idea of let's talk about the different groups. I'm kind of curious. So you have – now, these are very different cars. The Japanese manufactured cars are very different. There, I know they had the whole drift race and things like that, but are they, is that a separate category of race car, or is it just a sort of a group that's kind of formed just because they're driving similar, you know, manufactured vehicles?
What's going with the Asian vehicles? They will take an import and they can pro-modify it.
Okay.
To go down the drag strip, but here, you know, that we've seen, that I've been up against, is more, I mean, I've raced against imports. I've always, you know, gapped them, but you see more American muscle.
So the, now, see, this is interesting.
The imports.
You look, yeah, but you look at the development of the car. I mean, American cars, I think they stopped being good in 1972. Before that, you know, 1955 to 1972 is like the golden years of American cars. That's where all your muscle cars were. That's where all the really fun sports cars, the cool cars all came out in those, you know, the 57 Chevy, 57 T-Bird, 61 Corvette, you know, even the 72 Corvette was kind of nice too. But all the really cool cars were made before 72. And it seems like we lost, and this is when the Japanese cars came in, but the difference was they were smaller, more fuel efficient, more maneuverable, easier to park. And so there's a qualities that are valued in Japan simply because they don't have as much space. You know, it's Tokyo's really crowded. You know, you can't have, you know, a huge Ford Galaxy or a Chevy Impala, you know, downtown Tokyo. It's not going to work. But given the technology and the philosophy and the available space in the nation, we had these really very efficient cars that were much more maneuverable. So I would see the Japanese manufacturer or the Asian manufacturer cars, even the Europeans too. We talk about that too, but the Asian cars would be better on a curving track, would be better on a motocross track, would be better on a much more involved course than a drag strip or an oval track.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I mean, they are lighter, which gives mm-hmm. them, you know, more speed, obviously. But in the drag strip, you don't see many of those. You'll get on streetcar night, you'll get a lot of people come out there with their rice burners and think they're, you know, top dogs and this and that until they line up against my American muscle. They go out there, they put ice packs on their engines, like they're cooling them down and all this stuff. Wow. And I'm just like, oh goodness, let me just go ahead and blow them away and get them back on the street going home. But they are good drift cars because of the light aerodynamics of them. The curvy racetrack, stuff like that, those are good on because of how small they are.
Okay, interesting.
And
Matt?
Just to jump in real fast, is just to make up for using the term rice beater, I would have to say that they can make those cars fast, and there is a car, a Honda Civic, in Orlando Speed World that holds the quarter-mile world record at an 8.5-second quarter-mile run at 196 miles an hour.
Oh,
so
geez.
What happens with that?
No, I mean, we use terms like rice burner affectionately. We're not casting aspersions. It's not derogatory against Asian cars or Asian drivers or anything like that. In fact, we got to get away from that kind of stuff. Otherwise, we're never going to be able to have any fun anymore. You know, are we politically incorrect?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Am I proud of it? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll challenge it because I don't want people telling me what I can and can't say. You know, and it's kind of funny that, you know, and it's interesting. Well, I wonder if there's a term for, well, let's talk about the Puerto Rican cars, because in San Francisco, when I was a tour guide, one of my favorite weekends is when the lowriders came out. Man, the lowriders is great. You know, they bounce up and down all the way down the street. Man, this is good stuff, you know.
Well,
yeah, these 64 Chevys.
I got to interrupt for a second. I'm at my destination, so unfortunately I got to leave you guys.
Oh, this is getting fun. Well, let's talk during the week about your guests for next week, Matt. Thank you. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. All righty. Yep. We'll see you guys.
And leave your helmet on the front seat.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Cindy, do you have a few more minutes? Maybe it's the bottom of the hour?
Yeah, I have a couple
more
minutes, yeah.
Okay, good. That's great.
Yeah.
But so I forgot totally what I was saying. The lowriders. The Puerto Rican community, it would be in California, of course, you had in San Francisco, you have all different varieties, but you have Mexican and the whole Central America, South America. You know, we have an entirely huge
I hate to say, group it, but Latino community. But the lowriders were amazing. You know, the hydraulics, I mean, the cars, they understand cars. It's, you know, cars, the American dream, right? So you get these cars going down the street, you know, usually at the same weekend as the naked bike riders were going down, which is really embarrassing and stupid. But, you know, especially for the Kansas residents who came out to San Francisco with their kids, you know, and we had the naked bike riders going down Fisherman's Wharf. I used to work at Fisherman's Wharf. I was a tour guide there. Anyway, but the lowriders, we used to love when the lowriders came down because they bounce and they do all these crazy things. But cars are America. You know, lowriders are America. I love those cars. And does that translate to racing too? Mm. That was my question. That's what I was sort of leading to.
I haven't seen one out on there. I know they have. So this past Thursday, Matt's mom took our 7-year-old and his 5-year-old cousin to Daytona. They were doing the lowrider truck races up on the track. So they do the low riding trucks on the track. They have a truck race. But out on the drag strip, I don't really see them that much.
Well, I wouldn't want to drag race a low rider,
but
I think more just the cultural, the whole aspect of a car, of putting everything into your car, making you do things that most normal cars don't do that kind of stuff. it's just wild to watch that people, like you say, that put their heart, their soul, their money into these cars. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think of some things we should associate with racing.
Okay.
Movies like American Graffiti, mm-hmm. the song American mm-hmm. Woman, California Dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are really nostalgic and very, very good. It could cure COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have fun, fun, fun till Daddy takes the T-Bird away. I mean, we got songs mm-hmm. about cars. You know, GTO, my little GTO, you know, Jan and Dean. You know, cars had a 47 Chevy, we called it a Woody, Surf City, here we come. I mean, it's ingrained. Beach Boys. The Beach Boys would not be the Beach Boys without cars. You know, mm-hmm. and racing is so purely, and if it wasn't done, it started illegally and then it went to legal. You know, NASCAR started, they all started as rum runners. It's hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anything we've missed out on, Cindy, that we should cover the next little bit here? From you for listening earlier?
To go back to, I did, when you guys were talking about Bubba Wallace. So
yes.
He came in second this past weekend at the Daytona 500 again. And he was 0.036 seconds. Yeah. And he was behind, he was behind the number one car by 0.036 seconds. And he took Twitter and just ranted up a storm and just acted like a child throwing tantrums. And that's what he does. And that was one thing that you guys were talking about him. And I can believe because Bubba Wallace, that's him. He's theatrical. But, yeah, he came in 0.03 seconds behind the number one car, Cedric, and Austin Cedric, and he threw a fit about it. And actually, some people thought he won and started congratulating him. So he's going on there saying that, you know, that was too close to call, da, 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 da. It's just throwing a fit, not taking it with, you know, grace. Like, it was a photo finish. It was, you know, a timed, you came, it was second. You were behind. And so, but just the fact that he, you know, he's representing a big name, Michael Jordan, and who owns the car.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how he's acting. And so I'm just, that was one thing when you guys were talking about that. Maybe
no, that's very important because it's not going to help him.
Well, you
it's
know,
go ahead, Bianchi.
When you talk about the racial thing, Michael Jordan has been criticized for not speaking out on issues when he wants. You know, you got a segment in this population that's black that want to, I guess, politicize everything. Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, they are criticized as being, well, Sambos and Coons and so on and so on and so on. So that's what you have here in this country, and it has spurred up in the last 2 or 3 years to, you know, to a point where you never have seen it before. But I'm sure it'll mm-hmm. die back down when we go back to enjoying ourselves as usual.
You know, it's interesting that, as I was mentioning earlier with Matt, that racing is a great equalizer because you can't win because of your skin color. You have to win because of your driving ability and the ability of your car and your pit crew and everything else. It's a total thing. And your experience on that day, given that weather, given those set of circumstances, given the totality of the drivers on the field, is going to determine the winner. You know, so there's no affirmative action in racing, which is, you know, something I like about it. There's no privilege. And like I was joking earlier, you know, putting the black drivers up front and the white drivers in the back for racial equity. I bet you somebody would advocate that. You know, I probably should have said it just because someone's going to go, hey, that's not a bad idea. Yeah, let's do that. You know, but, you know, the fact that he came in second. And you look at the bobsled races. I was watching the Olympics, and I wanted to sort of bring that up. I don't know if you had a chance to watch any of it. I did, and every time I turned it on, curling was there, which always frustrates me. It's like shuffleboard, only less exciting. but some of the bobsled was fascinating, especially the Jamaican bobsled team. And those are measured in hundredths of a second. The difference between the first and the third bobsled, I think in the two-man and the two-woman, were the German team won by hundredths of a second. So this guy's worrying about a tenth of a second or 0.3, a third of a second. That's huge. In racing, that's actually huge. That's a large amount of time. That's not a photo finish. That's not equal. Because the way things work these days with the technology that we have and the cars and the speeds that they go at and the bobsleds and the skiers are winning by hundredths of a second. Ice skaters, speed skaters, all that kind of stuff. That's what swimmers, you look at the swimming distances. Those are mixed, unless you have some guy, you know, who's you know, genetically altered himself or not genetically, but altered himself to compete in women's races. But you look at the swim races, men and women, they're usually separated by absolute fractions of a second. We're that good now. The human has developed to a point, athletes have developed to a point where around the world, they're very competitive people and there's just shades of difference that separates them. So if he brings race into it, that detracts from him. It doesn't detract from racing. That's his problem. He's the one with the racist problem if he's bringing up his skin color as something that affects, you know, whether he won a race or not. That's how I see it.
And, you know, you've had those incidents when you had women drivers. They went through a period of ridicule and so forth, people putting maxi pads in all over the place. And just think how a female jockey – the ridicule and the castigation that she had been through. So,
well, let's ask Cindy. Cindy's a drag racer. Cindy's the driver. Let's ask her. Cindy?
Well, there's still a lot of it's not really bad. I just take it with a grain of salt. You know, the guys will go out there and flex and be like, you know, this is a man's world, this and that. But there's so many women rising up in the racing scene right now. And Leah Pruitt, you know, being one of them, and she's our main driver for Dodge, and you know, she's just out there killing it. But you know, it's funny because when I'm out there and I'm staging and stuff, for some reason all the guys that are out there feel like they need to come over and give me all these tips, and I think that's the masculinity in them. They feel like, oh, I gotta go help her, or you know, whatever, you know, I've been, oh, you're just a girl driver. You know, people will line up next to me, tune their cars down because they think I ain't got it. I am on the tree. Like I guess the tree and I, 9 times out of 10, I'm guessing correctly. So that whole thing, when that tree goes, I'm gone. And so they, you know, guys,
you tell everybody what the tree is
out there.
Tell the listeners what the tree is and what it means to stage.
Okay, so when you're staging, so the tree is the light. You get, when you stage, when you do your burnout, and then you stage up, you go through a beam. The first beam, you're getting staged. Then you've got 6 inches to bump up to light up the second bulb. When the second bulb is lit on both cars, you start spooling up or building your horsepower, revving your engine, whatever kind of motor. You know, you've got nitrous, you've got turbos, you've got pro chargers, however you've got to, you know, start spooling them up. And then on a pro tree, it goes right from the second beam lighting up, the second, you know, light lighting up to green instantly. But on a regular streetcar night, you're going to get the 3 yellows and a green. So you have certain beams that you have to hit. If you go through and bump through the beam, the second beam, you've lost the race.
Yeah.
So that's why
you usually
have your pit crew up there. They put their foot on the line and bring you in and stop you right at that beam. So you don't.
You know, my younger days, we used to stage on the street. I used to have a 67 GTO with a 400 cubic inch engine. And my nemesis in town was a guy that had a full 26 Hemi Roadrunner. And he used to beat me all the time.
Bianca, we didn't know this side of you. You're an outlaw race driver. That's funny.
Speaking of the outlaws, they're going to be here in Palm Beach International Speedway for No Prep Teams on April 8th and 9th. We're going to be down there for that.
Oh, cool. Details. Yeah, let us know.
Oh, we'll have lots of that. So the Roadrunners, those were the cars. But GTOs are no joke, especially on a big block. A lot of them went from nitrous. Excuse me, I'm eating a protein bar. From nitrous to twin turbos. But a lot of the twin turbos are and the pro chargers are rising up more than the nitrous. But I still love me a good shot of nitrous.
Do we have any decent sports cars on the market today? I think of like the Dodge Chargers and the Chevy Camaros and of course the Corvettes. If you've got, you know, that kind of money, they're trying to be Ferraris now. But where would someone start to get a decent sports car with some good handling and some power?
I would start with a Dodge, either Charger or Challenger. Hellcat Red Eye.
What's that?
That's mine. Or the Corvette C8. There's the Chevy Camaro is a hit or miss. I'm not a big fan.
Okay.
But the Dodge, there's the Dodge Demon. There's the Dodge Hellcat Red Eye, which, you know, stock is like 849 horsepower.
Oh, geez.
That's stock.
Where do you drive it, though? I think we talked about this. So, these cars, people can drive their regular cars now. There are certain tracks that allow people to do that.
Yes, so that's what our car is. Our car is technically a daily driver. A street car is a car that has a VIN number on the dashboard.
Okay.
So that's a street car. But our street car is also our daily driver. So I can go drop the kids off at school, go pick up the laundry and the groceries, go run the quarter-mile drag strip, and then come back and pick up the kids.
What a full day. Car. That sounds wonderful. I love it.
So we have a 2019 Dodge Charger with one kit of nitrous, 150 shot of nitrous. We've also done other things to amp up the horsepower, cold air intake. So there's modifications that can be done to add more horsepower. We're going to straight pipe it. So we're going to do a cat delete. We're going to straight pipe it. That's going to add more horsepower. But right now on the dyno, our car is pulling 603 horsepower. Our car is just a regular RT. Now, we could go out and get a Red Eye and have that horsepower, but when I first started racing this car, everybody told me I was not going to – oh, you can't take an RT. RT stands for road and track. You can't take that car. That's not a winning car. I said, hold my beer. Watch this. So that's when we started modifying the car. Yeah. I could very easily go out and get a Red Eye and blow them away. But now you've made it my goal to beat your butt in this car. So
a little bit of challenge goes a long way. That's fascinating. So you can get a production car that's fairly close. Well, how much horsepower did it start with when you bought it, and how much have you added to it? That'll probably give people a good idea how powerful it is now.
It started with 425 horsepower, that's stock. And then, adding a cold air intake, that adds, about 15 horsepower. You want to you got to take out the computer, unlock it, and then you can start tuning it with the with an HP tuner or a Diablo Sport tuner. And you can start adding power, if you want power out the launch. Now, see, my car has a launch control that I use, so I stage and then I start building up my RPMs. I launch at 2,000 RPMs. Once I hit second, I hit the nitrous button, and 150 shot spray goes into the engine immediately. So that's that. But you know, there's things that build up the horsepower as you go along. But the big thing is to, you know, you either put on a pro charger, supercharger, nitrous, or turbos. Those are going to be your main horsepower gains.
So it really comes down to fuel and air, right? You've got to have more air, and then, because I think if I remember my stoichiometric ratio is 14 to 1, 14 parts air, 1 part fuel. So if you want to have more fuel burned, you have to bring in more air because you've got to maintain that ratio no matter what happens, right? That's the, I mean, from airplane engines. So that's where the turbocharges, that's the cold air is more efficient, cold air as opposed to hot air, because hot air is less dense. So cold air can hold more fuel, right? That's what the logic of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
So you get more cold air, you're ramming air in, you're turbocharging, which boosts the air going in. So you're actually greater than atmospheric pressure. So atmosphere is 14 pounds per square inch, roughly, if I remember my flight instruction stuff. So that's what's going into your lungs. That's what allows your lungs to inflate, is the fact there's more pressure outside your body than in it, you know, especially when you lower your diaphragm muscle, your lungs inhale. Well, internal combustion engines inhale too. They breathe in air. That's why they're called air-breathing engines. And the more air you can put in, the more fuel can mix with it. The more fuel, potentially, the more power, especially when it's burnt the most efficient way. And the faster it's burnt, controlled, you know, the more power too. So the more air, the more fuel, the more power. And that's basically, you know, without getting too much and overheating and all those other problems. That's basically your challenge, right? That's
right.
How it works.
And it's natural.
Okay.
It's called natural aspiration.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you. That
natural aspiration, natural breathing. You got to have a good shoot at the end.
Yeah. We haven't talked about that yet. Yeah. Tell me about the shoot. Do you pop a shoot?
No, not yet.
No. Oh, okay, not that fast.
No, I have enough room to slow down before, after the light, I have plenty of time to slow down. Like I said before in the first show, you know, we roll our, if you watch any drag, a street car, a daily driver, whatever you want to call it, going down the track, after they pass the finish line, they roll their windows down because that brings the air in and it kind of gives it that shoot effect. If you don't have a chute on the back, but as we go along and the more power we add to the car, there will be a chute coming soon. Also, because my car is rear wheel drive, my front will lift. And so if we add any more, I am going to have to put wheelie bars on the back. Because if you go up, you ain't going straight. Wheelie bar. So my car is rear wheel drive. So when I am, when I launch, all that power that I've built up before the light turns green has transferred into torque into the back of the car, the rear end.
Right.
So that's what makes my tires hook and grab. The hook means to stick to the strip and not spin. And so if you've got too much going, your car is going to lift its front wheels up off the ground. If you do not have a wheelie bar to stabilize that lift, then you could ride right on your rear end all the way down the track.
Yeah,
so
front lifts up.
If you're seeing the sky and the stars, you are not going straight, and that's when the other car can gap you.
Wow. I noticed that the
a lot of people
actually,
say that that's really cool to see a wheelie, but it's not.
No.
That's not what we want.
No. Well, the one time I did in my misspent youth, the other big problem is that when I took my car over 100 miles an hour, which I shouldn't have, but I was curious. You know how it is. I was young. It felt very light. It sort of lifted up. It actually got higher. And I thought, this is too fast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like we're really in control of the road anymore. That's why I brought it back down in speed. But it was really fun for you know, about 5 seconds to be, you know, racing along at over 100 miles an hour. Unfortunately, I got away with it. You know, things I reveal on the show here. But anyway, but I'm sure we've all learned.
No.
But the car gets lighter. It actually rises. Is it like air coming underneath it or something? Or what's going on there, Cindy? I'll get to Bianchi.
It's the air flowing through it.
Okay. That's not good, is it?
Well, I mean, that's what we want. We want a good airflow because that's what gets you faster and down the track, you know.
But not in an old production, you know, street car. You don't want it rising up. It just seemed to rise up, and then it settled back down again once I got below 90. And I thought, okay, this is going to – I'm not going to do that again. That was pretty funny. All right, anyway, so, Bianchi, you got to come.
The higher the RPM, the more horsepower you're using.
Right. But it just seemed like the car rose up
off
the ground,
what really
like there was a cushion of air underneath it. That's the point I was getting to. Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
Mm-hmm.
What really looks neat is when that front tire comes off about maybe 3 inches, then you shift into the next gear. It comes down, then it comes riding up again, then you shift into the next gear. But the best smell you want to smell even better than Chanel is a burnout. Man, I wish I could bottle that and sell it.
That's what I'm saying. That's like everybody, you know, we're talking about people in masks and that and COVID, blah, blah, blah. Listen, we breathe in race fuel and, you know, burnt tires nonstop. I don't know what COVID could do to us. If the race fuel and the burnt tire smell hasn't got us yet.
Well, you know what? Your body is self-cleansing. You know, I mean, people have lived through volcanoes and forest fires, you know, for millions, thousands, however long we've been here, right? You know, so we're adapted to a certain amount of sunlight, you know, and we adapt. We're adapted to a certain amount of cold, certain amount of heat. You know, we take certain things. And so petroleum is a natural product. You know, so rubber is a natural product. These are things that are, I mean, they're synthesized, you know, somewhat. But would you use synthetic fuel or do you use regular petroleum-based fuels and things like that?
I use premium, yeah. I don't.
Okay, so there you go. So
we haven't switched it over for race. You can get a double. You can have it to where you can use, you know, regular gas, and then you can use race fuel. You can have two lines. But our nitrous, the nitrous goes right into the fuel line.
Interesting.
Cindy, you remember the Sunoco 260? That was some good gas.
Yeah, but now it's watered down.
Yeah,
so that's
watered
down. Talk about too. We haven't talked about that as well. Now, I had a crusade back a couple of years ago when I was back at WBY against, I think I did it on this show too, against ethanol. And I'd love to write a bill, you know, eliminating the ethanol subsidy and tax breaks for Archer Daniels Midland so we can actually burn real gas. And so our fuel has changed. I remember when I was a kid, Sunoco, you had like 5 grades of fuel you could choose from. You know, you had different grades depending on your car. And if you drove a higher performance car, you used a higher octane fuel. And for those folks that don't remember your high school chemistry, see if I get this right, octane is 8. So that's an 8 carbon chain. And it's the higher the octane, the higher the bonds between the atoms, the harder it is to break those bonds to release the energy to burn the fuel to make your car go. So higher octanes are actually more resistant to detonation. In other words, that's an explosion of fuel as opposed to a controlled burning of fuel. So the higher octanes allow for higher pressures, higher temperatures, and more power. And so when you had several grades to choose from, when you had a higher performance car, you had your, you know, Steve McQueen, you know, 67 Mustang, you know, from Bullet, you know, you'd pick a higher grade of fuel because you're going to be accelerating faster, you know, all kinds of good things you're going to be doing, which is the whole point of having a fast car in the first place. But we don't have those options. I mean, it's regular, you know, middle and premium, and that's it. And even those you're saying are watered down, what's going on with fuels these days? I'd be curious.
There's so many gas stations. You have to be so careful where you go to because
really? It
may say that the gas price is – let's say you've got this one gas station on this side saying, you know, $3.97 a gallon, and this gas station over here saying $3.50. Well, you think, well, heck, I'm going to the $3.50. But that's just, you know, some mom and pop shop, and their gas is so watered down, and you can tell the difference when you are driving because you're going to chug, you're going to clang, you're going to bang, and it's going to spurt. So we don't risk it. We go right to, you know, what we know, and I would rather pay the extra than worry about a watered down fuel, you know, messing up my engine.
Well, this is, I'm curious Bianchi's view on this too, but this is something that I've thought of too, and I heard this before, that the longer the generic fuels, the ones that are buying from whatever the cheapest brand is out there, there's a certain amount of condensation that gets into the fuel, a certain amount of water vapor that gets in, and the older the fuel, the more it's been transferred from tank to tank, you know, the more chance that it's picking up moisture. And that's going to ruin your fuel. It's going to degrade it down. So it's not that people are actually adding water to a fuel. I think it's just naturally occurring with the transfers, the storage in the tanks, you know, the mixing of other fuels from different tanks and, you know, what you're getting from, you know, brand X. So am I on the right track here? And are you better off with a brand name? Okay. Go ahead.
And that is what I mean. Because, you know, those generic ones, those are the ones that are getting it the cheapest. They're the ones that are buying the old, you know, gas that's been transferred so many times. That's what we're talking about. That's what I mean by that, to clarify.
So that's what
I don't mean
about
that somebody's personally going out there and watering it down. That's what we mean when we say that.
Yeah, I want to clarify that too. But so you think you're now with a brand name gasoline as opposed to, yes, it might be a little more expensive. I agree with you. It's worth paying the extra to get a brand name, because the brand name, that's, you know, from refinery to that station usually, mm-hmm. right? Or can that have problems too?
Exactly, yes.
So you're better for the brand name?
I personally haven't had any problems. I can't say that there hasn't been, but personally right. we haven't. You know, that's why, you know, we pay the $397 or $403, whatever it is right now, for the premium.
Worth
well, it costs really us almost $100 to fill our 18-gallon car.
Wow. Yeah, $350.
We had a lifted truck, a Toyota Tundra, uh-huh. and it was cheaper for us to fill that truck than our car.
Wow. Well, yeah, because you need premium in your even for daily driving, mm-hmm. you need premium in that car, right?
It has to. It absolutely yeah. has to. If you want it to run right and stay good, you need to put the premium.
We don't want that detonation.
The higher the horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know another thing then, too, Greg. Gasoline is a blend for the area that it's going to be used. You know, the gas you buy down in Alabama, well, if you that's a different gas mix, a blend that they sell up in Michigan because of the cold weather. And you can take take some gas and put it on a microscope, and you can tell what it's made for because the manufacturer has markers in the gas so you can tell where it comes from.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Denver, I imagine, has different fuel because they're up a mile high, and your oxygen requirements are different for a car. Cars, they have to be adjusted. I think the computers do it automatically now, but I remember when I took
from Colorado.
Oh, okay, good. So
and,
tell me about it.
Yeah, so we lived in Loveland, Colorado, and the air quality, it is very hard for the gas is different. And it's very hard for actually, this is a fun fact, turbo cars to spool up in higher altitudes.
Because the air is thinner.
So
that's
you
the
get
point
out
of
there,
a turbocharger,
race,
isn't it? Yeah.
Huh?
Well, see, turbochargers and airplanes, that's the point of them, is that when the air gets thinner, as you get higher, it maintains sea level pressure. But turbo car engines, car turbos had a problem? Now, that's that I'm curious about. It must be working differently.
It's the altitude, and it's the way that, you know, they're being tuned. If it's not used to racing in that altitude, now there's people, you know, there that race, they tune to the air, tune to the gas, tune to the altitude. But when, let's say I go up there and I had a twin turbo instead of a nitrous, my car would need more time to spool up to reach the higher RPMs because of the thinner air quality.
Interesting. Yeah, and people don't realize, and we've talked about this on the show before too, that airline cabins are pressurized to 8,000 feet. They're not pressurized to sea level. So while they're wearing masks and lowering, you know, the oxygen content, you know, in an airliner, you're also lowering it because of the 8,000 feet. And if you have a drink on top of that, you have alcohol on top of that, now you're really lowering your alcohol, your oxygen in your blood. And people, you know, you can pass out. People pass out, you know, from a drink on an airplane anyway. They don't know why, because nobody tells them that the cabin pressure is actually 3,000 feet above Denver. You know, so it's another, you know, 3/4 of a mile above Denver altitude is where your airliner, your air pressure is in your airliner. So, yeah, there may be a 34,000 feet, but the cabin air pressure, the actual environment that you're breathing, is still 8,000 feet. It's not sea level, and people don't understand that. Now, cars today, they're built to handle altitude changes, right? So the older cars, you had to adjust them. Like when I drove across the country from Boston back in the early 80s when I moved to California, you know, my car was not doing quite as well, you know, over the Continental Divide, obviously because the air was thinner up there. But it wasn't really suffering and I wasn't running it at high speeds, but I noticed a difference. As soon as I got down closer to sea level, it's like, oh, well, there's the engine again. It's back to normal. But now cars adjust automatically.
You know, when we fly, you get up at 10,000 feet, you got to turn some oxygen on. If not, you pass up.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've done a couple of cross-country trips in small airplanes, and we had the oxygen. Yeah. But it'd be interesting. Cars, you know, the car needs oxygen, you know, the driver does too. I don't think we have any – do we have any 10,000 – I don't think we're long enough at a 10,000-foot altitude unless you live there. For a lot of drivers, they don't have to really worry about that. But, yeah, computers, are they adjusting automatically now, Cindy, to the air?
Not you know, naturally, like if it's a, if you're using a, your car as a drag car, like, you know.
No, I'm talking about regular
cars. I'm pretty sure if we.
Regular production cars.
Regular cars.
Do they set the mixture? Computer set the mixture according to the air pressure?
You may not know. I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, okay. I don't really know because I'm more about, you know, what we do here. But I would assume they would have to. You know, I don't know because, I mean, somebody can come here to Florida and buy a car brand new and take it back to Colorado, and that hasn't been, you know, updated. So I think that all cars, for daily drivers, I would believe would have to come with some sort of the computer set to change with elevation.
Well, if you're optimum, you know, you have these seasons. You're like North Dakota. They've got 110 in the summer and, you know, 20 below in the winter. You know, that's a huge difference not only in temperature, but air density. You know, I used to love flying in the wintertime in my little Cessna 150, especially when I was by myself. I'm like a 16-year-old kid. I'm flying around New England and everything's snow-covered. But the plane performed like a rocket. It was great. You know,
well, and that's like that was that's with cars. So on the drive strip, we prefer a cool night or a cool day to race because that colder air, it cools our engines down faster. The cars pull in and it's colder, the cold air. So we get more performance than when it's, you know, 98 degrees outside and 100% humidity, it's going to slow us down.
Yeah. Well, the last question I have, and I don't know how much more time you have. I got to play something before Chancey gets here at the top of the hour. You can stay if you want.
Yeah,
you're welcome to stick around. Yeah,
no, I got to get going.
All right. So, well, maybe we'll do this next week. But you took your computer out of your car because it's a racing car. Can we do that too? Can we get the computers out of our cars? Or is that a whole long procedure?
So you need to go and have it. So, like, you would take your car to Diablo Sport or HP. They unlock the PCM. And it's not taking the computer out, it's unlocking it so that you can add the tuner to it. And that's when the laptops come out and you start calibrating. Well, I want to add boost at the big end, or I want to take timing out of this, you know, in between shifting and stuff like that. So it's not actually taking the computer out, it's unlocking it from the manufacturer so that we can start tuning the engine and the car and the drive shaft, all that stuff to our needs.
Would that be an advantage to a regular driver, just normal highway driving, or would that be more fussing than you need?
No.
It's not worth it?
No, it's more of a racing, yeah.
Okay.
It also is going to void your warranty.
Oh, well, okay. Well, that's
before you go, Cindy, I really have had a nice experience with you and the way you handle the questions, the explanation. You know, it's just right, downright American. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. Same to you. I'm proud of my heritage and my country. And I grew up on a farm in Colorado and moved to Florida, you know, when I was a teen. And we've been conservative the entire time. That's how we were raised. Our 14-year-old daughter has a Trump 2024 flag hanging in her room. Our 7-year-old knows cars more than us, you know, so it's definitely an American sport. We're proud of our country, not proud of our president, but.
Well, he's not our president. They have to worry about that. He's not our president. He's part of an insurrection.
No.
He shouldn't be there. This is the government choosing the government. In fact, I'm going to make a video on that. I'll have my own little State of the Union, but I want your 7-year-old on the show. It'd just be fun. Be the youngest person we've had.
Definitely. He will blow you away with his knowledge of cars and racing and all that stuff.
Well, here's the cool part too, because this is podcast. Everything we do is podcast. You'll be able to have that and save it for him. You know, when he's 10, 15, 20, you know, as he grows up, it's like, hey, this is where you at 7. You're on the radio, dude. You know, anything might be a sports broadcaster.
Yeah.
You know, things like that start, you know, with a single event. So I love having kids on. The youngest was 11. He was a chess man. He had his own chess website. And it was one of our most popular shows. And so, yeah. So kids are great. Kids are always welcome on the show. Thank you, Cindy. Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. We'll see you then. Thank you.
You're welcome. Before you go, just any information, contact information, your team, Facebook pages, anything you want to give about, you know, what you guys are doing. I always like to do that.
Yeah, so go ahead and follow us on Instagram. It's Mopars_beauty, and that's our car page. That has all our racing stuff on it for Instagram. And then YouTube is MCS_motorsports. And then it's also on TikTok as well as MCS_motorsports. So follow us, follow our journey.
Yeah. If anybody missed any of that, it's going to be on the podcast. That'll be about another hour or so.
And right now I'm trying to, Dodge has this thing out right now. It's called Chief Donut Maker. And what they're doing is basically, it's called Chief Donut Maker. And so it's from the Dodge Garage. And what they're doing is finding a person to represent them, go to events across the nation, and basically be, a face for them. So I just submitted my interview and my clip. It's actually on our Instagram page to be the Chief Donut Maker. They give you $150,000 and a Dodge Red Eye, Hellcat Red Eye. For
to
a
make
year.
Donuts?
So, I mean, car donuts.
That kind of donut. Okay, so I'm thinking to myself, what do they want a donut at the race for? That's thank you for clarifying. So you actually have to make donuts on the pavement? So you're going to be the Chief Donut Maker?
Greg from down Florida, you have to forgive him.
Well, okay, give me a chance. Well, they're Florida, too. Look, I've been involved in airplanes most of my life.
Florida.
Airplanes and music. I know guitars. I'll do a guitar show someday. But this is why I have people on that know more stuff than me. This is why I do it. It's much more fun. Mm-hmm. All right, Cindy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you. Be careful.
Here we go.
So, Greg, you have some neat people on your show, man. I go to bed an hour early, and I'm just so I can get prepared for your show. I say to myself, oh, man, it's just like a Christmas – Like Christmas Day, and you look at the presents under the tree, your programming on your show, you never know what it's going to be. See, I could be a rapper.
You could. In fact, if you want to do the official Action Radio rap, that would be I'm game. Now, I want you to do the regular report anyway. I mean, you're so much a part of the show. You're kind of like my co-host, when you feel like it. And so it's really nice to have you on the show as much as you are on the show. I really appreciate that, too. I find friends of friends. That's how, and I reach, but I also reach out too. And that's how I got in contact with Jen Clark in Australia, Jennifer Clark in Canada. Alan Dawson is a friend of mine. He was I met him when I was working on a cruise, the singles group I was working for a while, a couple of cruises. We became friends. And these people, but also the people that come to Action Radio, like Chancey, who's on the line now, and I have to play something before she gets here, just to be on the safe side in case we get to chatting. But no, I thought, I'll take it right now. I'm going to bring her on, and then we'll get to my, because she only has half. Well, we'll see. Chancey, do you have half an hour, or you got the whole show today? What have you got? Chancey?
Hello?
Do you have the whole show today, or do you just have half an hour?
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. No, sorry. Yeah. I still have half an hour. Yeah. Well, let me get you on now then, and I'll play at the end of our chat, then I'll get to our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, which is fine. That works out okay, too, but okay. Then we can maximize your time. But to end it with Fiona's point, you look at the people, look at Chancey, for example, okay, Wine, Weed, and Wellness. The folks that we have, the guests, the reporters, everybody that's involved with the show, they share a bunch of things in common. These are extremely bright people. These are people that have passion for something. They have tremendous knowledge about a certain area, and they want to share it. And we all believe in freedom. And so you look at the universals that are with the people that are involved with this show. And Chancey and Pianca, I mentioned this earlier in the show, we lost one of our folks, Eric Colley, my webmaster, who created this unbelievable Write Your Laws website just out of COVID last week. And I didn't know. Something's wrong with the website. Yeah. I was just calling him to find out. And so, and this is a guy that knew everything about, he knew all the stuff we knew. He had the jab update. He and his wife did this website. He was besmallbusiness.com, created this unbelievable website. I always remember, the work that he did for us. And then even if you know everything there's still, some life still happens to you and life still ends. And it's really unfortunate, but I'm just glad to have known him for the short time, that he was here. But like I talked to him maybe a month ago, he was perfectly healthy and things were fine. And that's how fast these things can happen. So maybe we can talk about that a bit. But just then with Pianchi's point, it is amazing. It is amazing to me every day the people that come to this show. It's an eternal fascination with how these things happen, that the most just incredible people do come here and are continuing to come here, and the show's growing. And it's going to be growing by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. We've got the drag racing community. Matt and Cindy are going to bring in the racing community. You know, we've got the whole wellness crowd from Chansey. You know, more organic wine tasting. That was good. But we've got your knowledge, Pianki, and everybody's knowledge comes into the show in just amazing ways. Well, since you're here, I'm going to play your theme, Chansey, and we'll be right back.
Oh, awesome.
What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chansey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. There you go. That should get you going.
Welcome, welcome.
Yeah. So what's happening, Chansey?
So how are y'all doing? Morning.
We've been talking racing all morning. We've had a great number of time, racing, car racing, NASCAR, Daytona 500, speed, fumes, you know, fuel, rubber. It's been a great morning. So feel free to check out the podcast.
That's what we did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we did this weekend.
On the
we
show.
Raced.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen on the show, because I never know what's going to happen on the show. I'm as surprised as anybody with all the stuff we get into. Yeah. So you were at a race too?
Yeah. Yes, my husband races dirt bikes, and so it was a woods race. And it was funny, somebody texted me and said, hey, you should come watch the Daytona, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, actually, we're at a race, and it's a lot more fun. No, I'm just kidding, but it's dirt bikes. And so we rode like 34 miles in the woods. And, yeah, it's a fun time. It's like a sprint enduro type thing. Yeah, he will never do that, so there's that.
I'm sorry, no.
We can't drag him on
to talk about it?
He doesn't.
Okay, fine.
No, he's okay. Right. But it's just cool to, you know, be active like that. That's the thing is. But bringing in everything that we talk about, there was a gentleman that was with us, and he was constantly gagging and throwing up, and the heat was too much for him, and using the bathroom 24/7 and all that kind of stuff. And turns out he had ate Taco Bell the night before, and had zero anything nutritional in his body, and was chugging Propel. And so there is your, you know, there's the line of people, and he's been vaccinated, fully vaccinated, no boosted, so never mind. He's only had the two shots, but that was in the military is the reason. Like he's not even in the military, but he's retired, so he was like, I felt like I had to get it to get my benefits and all that. But so you see two stages of health. Like my husband's over here, you know, we're eating organic and clean and snacking every 2 hours and, you know, getting water in and doing the right thing. And we ate good the night before. And then you have this guy who can get on a dirt bike and he can ride 34 miles in the woods, but he's dying. Like he's, you know, it's terrible. And for 2 days he couldn't walk after. So those are the kind of things that I like to bring into people's life. Like when they see us at the track and I'm pushing oils on Justin and putting CBD on his back and doing all these things, they think we're extra, but the next day he was minorly sore, you know, whereas someone else who doesn't do anything, you know, they can't walk the next day. So those little things just matter so much. And it was a testimony to that. I was like, yeah, he's 10 years older than you, but that shouldn't be that big of a difference if he rides dirt bikes. So it was really neat to see like what we do is actually working. Because you hope it is. You just, you know.
Well, no, I mean, that's really interesting because this was a racer that was throwing up all the time and doing all this kind of stuff. There wasn't a spectator you're talking about. It was one of the racers. Okay.
Right. Yes. This was one of the racers. Yeah. And it happens all the time. Like I see guys chugging a Mountain Dew after. Yeah. Like it's weird how they can, they don't understand the tax that they're putting on their body because they're able to do it in that moment. But then when they turn 50 or 55 or 60 or however long, you know, they have back problems or their knee goes out and they blame it on the racing. And it's not the racing. It's the way you took care of your body when you chose to race. So, yes, the racing takes a tax on you. But just like these, you see these drag racers 90, 80 years old Like, we have a friend, Shannon Jenkins. He's like top drag, I don't even know, it's IHRA or NHRA. And he's like, I think he's 70-something, and he still gets out there and he goes and he takes care of his body, you know? So you have to, when you're going to put your body through something like that, you can't just be like, oh, well, it's the racing. You know, no, what did you do before and after? Did you take care of yourself? And it's the same thing with, well, it was COVID, and not to bring up, you know, the gentleman that passed away. That's very, very sad. Like, I've, as soon as I saw your message, I prayed for that whole family, because it is, that's one of those things where you go down a spiral of, well, we did everything. What if? We did everything. What
did everything
if?
Right,
not that
as,
they
you know,
did.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how much I can ask, though, because I don't want to be tacky and rude at such a reason it was last week.
Right.
But the point is, they knew. I know they knew because I saw their website. They knew what we knew.
Right.
They knew all the same information.
Right.
They knew about early treatments. They knew about hydroxychloroquine, about ivermectin.
Yeah.
They knew about everything, and which all just to prove that you can still, I mean, you know, none of us are getting out of here. So
no,
the,
and that's
the,
what
the question
that's,
is. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's what me and – it's so crazy. Me and Brian talked about it at Turbo 2 the other day. He said, you know, I think we've all been damaged by this, even if we just got the virus. I said, yeah, we have. That's where us who are against all of the mandates, we're not safe either. You know, if we got COVID, it did do some damage to our lungs. Dr. Viglione, you know, is she talked about that. Her heart, she got her heart tested after she had COVID, and it was like the heart of a 60-something-year-old, and she's
in
her 40s or something. Yeah, so it damn, and she works out. She biohacks. She does all the things. And so we are not, you know, none of us are safe from it, but that's why you have to do the work, because unfortunately they've, you know, leased this out on us, and there's nothing we can do except for take care of our own bodies. We can't, sitting here and blaming them does nothing. You know, it's great, it feels good, but okay, so are you taking supplements now? And are you, you know, avoiding sugar and dairy and wheat and corn and soy? Because you don't have to do it for the rest of your life, but you might want to do it for the next 2 years if you got COVID, you know?
Yeah.
Because the inflammation is still there.
Are there restorative things you can do for hearts and lungs? I mean, is it
exercise
and diet? I mean, what is heart? Well, lungs, you know, you exercise your lungs. I had the biggest pair of lungs in the world, you know, when I was a tuba player, because I was exercising them constantly. I know you laugh. Listen, I had a 6.7 liter lung capacity.
No, I know. I remember.
I told you that story?
Yeah.
When I went to after college, they had this Blue Cross, you know, testing trailer was going around, and you know, the jocks in the company, actually it was a government agency I worked for in Massachusetts, and the jocks, the guys that run, you know, take their showers and put their suits back on and go back to work, the men who ran at lunchtime, you know, they had about 4.5 liters of lung capacity, and I said, well, let me try this just for the hell of it. I'm like, yeah, Greg, okay, yeah, sure, go ahead. Well, look, I was a tuba player. Oh, yeah. And then I said, I got a tuba player. I might have a pretty good set of lungs. I used to, you know, pass a lot of air through a 15-foot horn, you know, 20-pound horn.
Yeah.
Like, sure. And when I blew 6.7 liters, that ended the conversation right there. But that's just exercise. So I'm wondering, you can stretch your lungs. You can get more capacity.
You can.
And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I have it. I probably don't have it now, but I still exercise. I still do 45 minutes of aerobics on the elliptical, and then do about a half hour on the machines, you know, routinely. And I'm still losing weight, so I can imagine what it's going to be when I get my weight down where it's supposed to be after the heart surgery episode. But restoration, can you, heart especially?
Oh, God, that's my – well, that's my R&R, because that's the name of my business, is renew and restore. So if you renew the mind, you restore the body. So once you get it in your mind that you have the ability to restore your body, then you feel like you have power. So I was coming on today to give everybody homework. And if they want to do it, they can. But if, you know, so I would like for everyone, if they can, locally, or everybody that's listening. So in your local area, there's honey somewhere. And I know we've talked about this a million times, but honey is so important. I don't care if your doctor has told you to stay away from sugar, tell them to call me or tell the person to message me. It is not the same thing. If it is local raw honey from your area, your community within, you know, 25 to 30 miles, maybe 50, you need to be taking a tablespoon of that, a tablespoon, not a teaspoon, a tablespoon a night after dinner. And so everybody that I've been giving that to these past 2 weeks have said they have slept like a baby, and it's because it balances your sugar and it helps with anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, antifungal. It is a natural antibiotic that doesn't kill the bad germs. So that's number one, is taking a tablespoon of honey at night. And then number two, and you can do it in tea. I would prefer you not do it in tea, because it's like it takes the some of the medicinal properties out of the honey, but since you're taking a whole tablespoon, it's okay. But, like, just lick on it after dinner like a dessert, or put it on some kind of piece of bread, or, you know, I don't know, just get it in somehow. And then the in the morning, tablespoon of coconut oil, like organic, extra virgin coconut oil. And
where
same
concept,
that can be in your... At your local grocery store. Thank God everywhere usually carries it now. So it'll be at Publix, it'll be at Target, Winn-Dixie, Kroger, all of those people. Coconut oil. It'll be it's solid.
Where do we find that?
It's in the cooking. So it'll be with like the cooking sprays and the cooking oils, because you can cook with it. But it's in a glass jar, and it'll say extra virgin, unrefined, and preferably organic, because that's who I am. I'm not going to tell you not. So, but it's solid, and it will melt at 98.6 degrees. So it melts at room at like body temperature.
My room's not at 98.6, but
Well, you know, that's what they say. Yeah, or body temperature is what I meant. Yeah. So you take that in the morning in your coffee or your tea, or just chug it down, and those two things will change your life. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it lubricates everything from the colon to the joints to the eyes to the teeth. And if you like it, move it. Some people are like, oh my gosh, I can't stand it. But once you start doing it for a while, it's great. But rub it around your teeth, rub it on your gums with your tongue, like get it everywhere inside of your mouth. It helps with natural bacteria. And those two things are so simple. And people think that because they're so simple, they don't need to do them because they've got to do something big. I've got to take this pill, or I've got to do this surgery, or I've got to fix myself. Like those two things consecutively every day will start to make changes, that brain cognition, brain fog, like everything will start to change. And then you'll feel like maybe walking to the mailbox 15 times back and forth, or, you know, something that you can do that you know that you're at home. So I always tell people, they're like, well, I'm scared to walk away from my house and get my knees start hurting. Or I was like, walk around your house, do squares or circles around your house or around your apartment complex, or just walk to your mailbox and back. If people think you're crazy, tell them what you're doing and they might want to join you. So I think people are just like, well, I don't have time, or I can't do that. You know, walk around in your house. We got stuck somewhere one time and I went into all the rooms and went to every single corner of the house a bunch of times, you know, and it's crazy how your mind, you'll start to think, you'll answer questions, because our bodies are meant to move.
Yeah.
So even when you get home, I have a lot of parents that I tell that to.
Are you there?
Being a parent most of the
time.
There
we go. Okay. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, can you hear me?
You just cut out for a second.
You know what else?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's okay. That's fine. As long as you're there. I never know when this show is going to – we've had technical difficulties where everything just stopped. I was like, where's everybody? So
it's a little, I know. I'm trying to stay in one place.
Yeah. No, you're fine. Yeah. Yeah. Bianchi?
You know what else? You was talking about honey.
Yes.
A quarter water, a tablespoon of honey, and a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar. Shake it up.
Yes.
It's good for your asthma.
It is. It's amazing. So I think I remember telling you I can't do apple cider vinegar right now, which I'm very frustrated about because of the mold. So then I tell people that, I'm like, if apple cider vinegar messes with your stomach, that's why. A lot of people are like, I take apple cider vinegar and I can't stand it. Well, you probably have mold. So, but yes, it is very good. Apple cider vinegar in all other forms is amazing. And they actually have capsules now that I'm interested in. I don't know if that would help. I don't know if that would be the same thing, since it wouldn't be going. I don't
know.
Put it
in my
salad.
It would
be interesting to see if people.
You know,
we used to
put
it in everything.
Apple cider vinegar.
I loved
oil
it.
And vinegar.
Yeah.
That's what I probably put coconut oil and apple cider vinegar on it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Because I used to do that with my, like essential oils. I would do like a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar with a drop of lemon. And then honey, like he was talking, and just drink it down, and it's good for everything. So, yeah. But the parenting thing is where I'm seeing a lot of it, I guess, now because the kids have went back to school physically, is that the parents are doing their 9-to-5 or their whatever, and they're either single or together, or one of them does most of the work, or one of them can't be there, and they go right into the house, and they become mom or dad. So they've been working all day. They're who they are. They're, you know, doing the thing. And then they get out of the car, walk right into the house, and the kid is attacking them. Mommy, mommy, daddy, daddy, come look at my picture. Come do this. And they want to be involved. They want to do that. but their brain is still in that mode of work. And so some of it isn't their fault if they're snappy or they, you know, turn a good parent, of course, you know, most of them are great. I'm not saying, but I've seen it happen to where like the parents like, no, not right now. I can't do that. I can't, you know, I don't want to play. I don't want to draw. Whereas if they would have just took a walk around the block, literally, or around their vehicle a few times and got a different view in their eye span of like, oh, I'm at my house. Oh, I'm fixing to go in to be a dad or a mom or an uncle or an aunt or a grandmother or a sister or a brother, then they can handle what's coming at them. We can't expect, like, we're always on autopilot most of the time. So if we turn that off and we take a look around, we can be that next version of ourselves. And you can't do that if your brain is constantly fogged with toxins and all of that. So you have to get it out. And you do have to detox, man. So, I mean, that's where we're at.
I had some fun with your theme from Ouija boards and crystal
balls
and gypsy stuff too. Oh, yeah,
yeah.
I had a great time with it. Well, all the misconceptions out there. The other thing you mentioned previously on shows is activated charcoal. And so I'm kind of putting together a little experiment here, which I need to do. I'm going to talk to you off the air about that. Now, local honey I've been using for years and years and years. And I always made sure because I knew the temperature of the tea would ruin some of it. That's why you get uncooked honey.
Yes.
Well, I figure if honey's is better uncooked, I'm not going to put it in my tea to sweeten it, but I'm also going to take a small spoonful for myself that's right out of the bottle, right out of the jar. So that improves that.
Yes.
Coconut oil, you can use coconut oil for anything you can use olive oil for, right? And it's better for you.
Yeah,
you can fry in it. You
can
put it in salads. You can okay, all right. So coconut oil, I'll check that out. Charcoal, we're going to get to apple cider vinegar. I already have. Like I say I toss it in my wonderful salmon mix. So I took all the sandwiches that I used to make and turned them into salads. So that's how I got rid of the bread.
Good.
Yeah. Well, you can use that too. Any sandwich that you can make without the bread. Mm-hmm. And now it's a salad. Just maybe even throw in some extra stuff and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that, and I've got. But here's what's interesting. When you're talking earlier about the energy drink plus the Taco Bell food plus everything else, what I don't think people realize is a lot of this is cumulative. And so there's no, you can't say that one thing is bad for your health because really a lot of things are bad for your health. The lack of exercise, the preservative filled food, the extra sugar, the lack of good, nutrition from natural things. You know, there's a difference between an apple and processed apple juice drink with high fructose corn syrup. It says apple, that's the only thing they have in common, but they're two totally different things. And so the lack of sleep and whatever else is going on, if you need an energy drink, chances are you're suffering from lack of sleep. Well, the cure for that is not an energy drink, the cure is sleep.
And
all the things, go ahead. You know what I'm talking about.
No, you're wanting the energy drink. You're wanting the energy drink because what's in the energy drink makes you want it. So you may not even be tired, and it's just a thing.
Oh.
Like, I've got to pop this monster before I go to work. It's the high fructose corn syrup. It's the caffeine that you're craving. It doesn't even have to have it. Like, you're not even tired at that moment. You're just like, oh, this tastes so good. And it does, because that's why they like them, So that's where you're at is, and wine is bad for you. So that's what I say. Like, organic wine is going to be your best choice. That's why I tell people, in moderation and balance. So if I sat here and I was like, well, all I do is drink organic wine and I drink four bottles a night, I'm still probably going to get cirrhosis of the liver. But, just organic.
And that's not regenerative.
But it is one of those. And you have to, it's balance. And so that's where people are like, well, if you tell me all these things I can't do, I just can't do anything. Well, that's why I'm telling you what to do. So you can add these things in to what you're already doing. And then you will see that the other stuff starts falling away. Maybe if you got your sugar craving done at night with honey, you wouldn't want that tub of ice cream in an hour, but even if you do, that's fine. Go ahead, because you've already, but maybe next time you put some fruit and then you put the honey on it and then you get some yogurt and then you're like, oh, wow, I just had dessert and it was amazing.
Oh, listen,
I
put my local honey on my organic yogurt and I got a twofer. So I'm all set.
Amazing. Yeah, it's so good. That's in the mornings, that's what I'll do is like granola and yogurt and then honey. Yeah. So,
see, I removed the granola. I'm sort of avoiding carbs. I have almost a carb-free diet. I feel better. I'm losing weight, you know. And as I lose weight, which is fascinating, as I get back to what I was before heart surgery, it's interesting. In fact, someone's got to explain to me someday why I gained like 100+ pounds, you know, immediately after heart surgery. I have no idea what happened with that. No one's ever been able to explain why that was, and it's taken years to kind of work it back off again. But something went horribly wrong with my body. What's that?
Stress.
Yeah, it's stress in your thyroid. I think it was your thyroid, because usually that's what happens. It's like you had a major surgery, even if you came out of it and was like, oh, that wasn't that, you know. But your body is it's repairing. It takes years for that, and so it put on weight to protect you. It was like, okay, now we got to protect Greg. His heart's not good, but that's just what the body thought, you know. So it was like, let me store all this weight. That's why these people who starve themselves all day, they're still obese, is because their body is storing everything because they think it's never going to eat again. So they're wondering why, well, I only eat one meal a day and I've lost 5 pounds, like in a month. And it's because your body is protective. That's what it does. And it does it sometimes in the worst way, but it's to keep us alive at that moment.
Yeah, but that's how I'm losing the weight is eating for like, you know, between 4 and maybe noon, and that's it. That's all the food I'll have
today.
Right.
Well, but you're
not
eating though. Yeah, exactly. You're eating food. Yeah. Instead of just like, well, I eat an apple in the morning and then I eat a bar and then I really don't eat dinner. A lot of people tell me that. They're like, I just skip dinner and go to bed. And I'm like, okay, well, we got to get all, I don't know, I got to help you there. But the granola, it's purely Elizabeth is the brand that I prefer because it's the best.
Okay.
And I'll send you some pictures of that, but it's purely Elizabeth. They have keto friendly. They have gluten-free friendly. They have all that. So like, and I don't even know about the carbs. Let me see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 9 carbs for a third of a cup.
Well, carbs aren't bad. I'm just keeping them down low at this time when I'm losing.
Right,
when I get back to
when
I get to a maintenance diet, when I'm back, you know, where my old jeans fit me again, the pre-heart surgery jeans, that's my goal. And when I get back into my old clothes, which I've kept, you know, then I know I'm back where I was. You know, but I had my situation was my heart was only pumping half its blood. The other half was going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a serious medical, you know, potentially fatal condition. And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I've traded, you know, fixing my heart, which apparently is doing amazingly well. There's no murmur. There's no nothing. Everything, you know, 100% blood's going well, as much as close as anybody can have. It's never 100%. But point being, it's a lot better than 50, you know. So that's taken care of. But the sacrifice was everything else, circulation, you know, a bunch of other things happened, weight especially. And, yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense that I was totally stressed out. It was a totally stressful experience, especially when I almost died 3 weeks later from suffocation because those blood thinners, you know, had my chest filled with fluid. So once that was taken out, it was a long road to recovery. Then, of course, I drove to Florida, you know, 4 months after major heart surgery, you know, to start a new career and a new life.
Right, so you could have got a blood clot. Yeah.
what do you think? Well, anyway, point, you know, I've had a little bit of stress, but, you know, stress to me is a challenge.
Right.
But I try and limit it and put it in perspective. But it was good stress because it was going to something I really wanted to do. So I think the real stress is when you do things that you don't want to do. That's the real stress. That job that you don't want to go to. That marriage that you don't want to be in. That relationship, that family, you know, person you don't want to see at the next dinner. You know, these are, you know, the argument, the talk that, you know, you've just been told you're going to have with your significant other. That's stress, you know. And I try to avoid most of those.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Pianchi,
well, that's, yeah.
Can
can
you also mention to the listeners on what they can do to detox their body, even those who have taken these shots?
Yes, I can. It's a lot. But where you start is that activated charcoal, I'm telling you, and you have to get a good brand. And the only two that I refer are Bulletproof brand and Quicksilver, because they have done the research. They have watched it detox mercury, aluminum, you know, all the polysorbate 80, whatever the crap is in those things. And so it is important to get that into your system and it start cleaning out your colon. So that would be where I would start, with activated charcoal and getting education on that, where that's a whole show. But basically just reading the bottle and doing what the bottle says, because those two companies have told you how to do it. Some of them just say, take 2 before a meal or take 2 whatever. Well, it needs to know, you know, have you had medicine? Do you have a medicine that keeps you alive? You don't need to take activated charcoal right with it, because, I mean, it's not going to take the medicine completely out of your system. It's just either going to make the medicine work better because you're detoxed and your body is like receptive, or it's going to lower the effect of the medicine because it pulls the chemicals out of the medicine too. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. But you know,
okay,
makes sense? So, reading the labels.
Exactly.
A significant point of actually reading the labels. I don't think people read the medicine labels.
Yes.
Well, the doctors already
take four
of these, and you know, and there's something there that says warning: do not take if. And people go, "Well, my doctor didn't say that, so that doesn't count." Yeah, it does.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this was one of my biggest things. So, Pianki, the next thing I'll tell you in a second. The next thing would be it's the coconut oil and the honey. So these are three things that everyone should be doing, whether they've had the shot or not. And then a sauna and or a 40-minute hot bath with a cup full of Epsom salt and a half cup of baking soda. But where we're at with the baking soda is people are going to, again, think I'm extra, is that it needs to be Bob's Red Mill baking soda. I'm sorry, this is true real life. My house alarm is going off.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My house alarm was just awesome.
Yeah.
Even that.
So all these companies you're mentioning.
That's real radio. Yes.
All these companies you're mentioning, if they want to sponsor your report on the show, please feel free to give them the option.
They won't, but I'll ask them. Yeah. So they're huge. I mean, these people are like, you know, I mean, like they're, yeah. So, I mean, if they, yeah, I've tried to be positive and think that they would. So I should be more positive about that. But, and it's one of those things to where that's why they are as big as they are, is because they have the people who can do the research, so they just pay them to do the research. Whereas me and you start, oh, well, I think I'm going to take this supplement for a while, and I'll read this, and I'll try this, and I'll see how it does with my body. Where no, these people have third-party studies. They've figured it out, you know, and we don't have to figure it out. So it makes a lot more sense.
This is a whole show right there because, you know, everybody talks about experts. And whenever they say experts, especially the liberals, they're always talking about government experts. The government expert in this case would be the FDA. And everything that the FDA has recalled, we know the FDA at one point approved. The FDA has approved some horrible things. The FDA has denied some equally wonderful things. And so the fact, now I imagine most of these people use private researchers. Is there something that is the government, of course, I know the government's looking down on that because they want to be able to approve everything. But are people skeptical because it is not a government research thing, or the people that take these things don't care? I personally don't care. I'd rather have a good private source because I know the private sources are in it. You know, and profit is a good motive. You know, you want this to work. You know, the government doesn't care. If they do something wrong, they don't suffer personally. But if you're in a private research company, you know, you stand by your research. So it's got to be good. If a private company is selling a supplement, they stand by that. And if it doesn't work, people aren't going to buy it. They're out of business. So people say, well, profits are a bad thing. Well, no, they actually have a real discipline to them. You know, there's something about the market that if something doesn't work, you're out of business. So is there any, I guess, aspersions cast against private researchers in terms of developing these supplements and things like that? Or are they looked upon, as I would look upon them, as qualified? If they can do the work, I don't care whether they're government or private. In fact, I'm more likely to trust a private source because of things like the profit motive.
That's the reason I trust it. If that's the question that you're asking, it's because so basically I trust people that have done the work and it has changed their life. And then they tell about the companies that they use to change their life. So usually the people that I listen to have an affiliation now with the company because they've like, this company works, here we go. But when they found it, they just found it. Does that, you know, so it'd be like me or you finding some amazing juice that gave us energy and we just told everybody else about it and they started taking it. And then that juice company, we were like, well, we're going to back this juice company because it's changing lives. So
Pianki's
that's why I like
powerful
it.
Powerful punch product. Yes, we're going to start.
Pianki's
power punch product. Well, did you ever hear, in fact, we actually had another product from Pianki too. Did you ever hear about Pianki's Picture Perfect face shaving cream?
Oh, great.
You're
going to spoil it.
What? Spoil what?
I want to say this. I see this bulletproof. It's charcoal and coconut together. Coconut charcoal.
Yes.
That's the one you're talking about?
Yes. That is the one I'm talking about. And Yeah, you should. I'm telling you, I keep it in stock and I sell it to my clients, you know, because a lot of people don't want to order stuff offline. I have nothing. I have no affiliation with Bulletproof. I don't get a discount. I basically just buy it and then I sell it to them for what I bought it for. But that's how people like it, is they want it right then, instead of being like, well, go online and order this and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it is. It has the coconut oil in it and the charcoal in it, and that's so that it coats your colon and your intestinal tract while you're when you take it. So, because it's amazing. I mean, that is the best. That's the one that I'm going to give you, Greg, is the one that Bianca's talking about. And so it's $20 a bottle. It's what I sell it for. And, yeah, it's amazing. And you just take, you know, it'll tell you how to take it on a bottle.
You got a website? You got a website, Shelly? Make sure you give that before you leave, or how we can order it from you.
I will, Bianca. You're so sweet. I do have a website, and I'm so lackadaisical with it, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's my generation or if I'm just like, I think I've been a people person for so long that this technology thing has like really got me, because I'm like, yeah, I'll meet you at the Walmart, and I'll give you my, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I got it. I got to get it to where people can order stuff long-term, like away. Yep. So what I do right now is people message me from all over. Like I have people, you know, New York, Washington, and then we talk. And then if they feel comfortable going online and ordering the stuff, they do. But usually I just like make an order and then drop ship it to their house. So like, because usually it's from a different, there's some of them are from different companies. So I get it all and then I ship it to them. Does that make sense? So it's like I'm a little kind of, like a little side business, but really not. But yes, I will get, my website is Chancey Terry, like my first and last name.com. And that's how you get in touch with me. And you can find my Facebook and my Instagram and my wine and my oil and oil page. And then from there, we talk and we discuss and I come up with a plan and then I send you the plan. And it's like a whole thing. So, but I'd be happy to help anybody. That
and Pianca, I didn't want to ruin anything you were going to say. So I hope I didn't spoil anything you were going to talk about. Yeah, I want us to keep going. But yeah, this is critical. You know, these are things that you can do for yourself. You know, so much of what it is the things that don't help you. And these do. And so, yeah, I want to try that. And I'll be reporting on this as we go through. Because I'm finding as I lose weight, I'm getting more and more energy. And I'm going to take like a martial arts course. I'm thinking, you know, I can do all kinds of things that I haven't done before. Or it's been a while. I took Kung Fu in my 20s. It was great. But just all these things you can do. And your life, you know, your attitude is your life. It really is. And part of that attitude is wanting to be healthy. You have to want to be healthy. You know, if you get into a mindset. Yeah, and I think people, they retire and they think I should be sitting on the porch and drooling. No, get out and do
something.
There are 90-year-olds running marathons. There are 100-year-olds doing things.
Yes.
So it's no one gets eternal life, but you do get, in terms of on this plane, but no one. But the thing is, the quality of your life while you're here, you can have a huge effect on. You know, the big guy upstairs already determined how long you're going to be here. But then the question is, what are you going to do while you're here? You know, and
exactly.
So maximizing your health, maximizing your impact. Yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, finding out what works for you, not for just because your entire office is doing CrossFit and you can't do CrossFit, so you don't do anything. You need to find out, and that's a whole other thing that I'm getting into is like your, I mean, it's called dosha, but it's like what drives you, like what food is good for you, what movement is good for you, and what environment is good for you. And that is different for everybody based on when you were born, your chemical makeup, like your environmental toxicity. So finding that out and then seeing it make a difference makes you feel so much better. You're like, whoa, I only walked 2 miles and I feel amazing. You know, or I walked a mile yesterday and a mile today and I feel like I went to the gym 5 days in a row. So it's all about finding that balance and what makes you work. And husband and wives, I see this all the time. They work out together and they try to do the exact same thing. A man and a woman, their chemistry is completely different. You know, yeah, that's fine if you want to lift weights and you want to run and you want to bench press and you want to do all that, but you don't have to. A woman's body is completely different than a man, and that's on purpose. So you need to be figuring these things out. So, yes, exactly. So you need to figure these things out so that you feel accomplished and that you feel like you're actually doing something for your own health, because that's the only thing we have right now. And I have one quick thing that I want everybody to Google if you're into the whole, because we're going back to the conspiracy thing, is ask Google what the leading cause of death will be in 2030. So you'll be surprised.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And I can pull it for you.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Here's what's interesting.
No, you
got to
do Google. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've talked about this before, that the leading causes of death are heart disease, cancer, and doctors. So when people look to doctors for their expertise, you know, considering their track record, considering they almost killed me, I mean, I got brilliant heart surgery, and then the blood thinners or something caused my chest to fill with fluid. All I know is that ever since I stopped taking blood thinners, I felt fine. So you tell me what
they
do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my empirical evidence based on the fact that I'm still here and not, long ago have left this world. But yeah, it would have been within two days I would have been gone easily. So I understand that.
And
that's medical malpractice.
Flaxseed oil.
What's that?
Flaxseed oil is good for the heart too, Greg.
Okay.
It is. It's amazing. And frankincense is another one. So if you still have that, I don't know if you have that roll on, if you still have the one that I made, you can roll it on your heart every day too. Yeah.
Okay.
It lowers blood pressure, like not to a bad thing, but like if your blood pressure's high, it'll balance it out. It's super good for just heart health. So take you some flaxseed oil and put you some frankincense on that heart, even though it's working great, just saying, to, you know, keep it going.
No, listen, I'm going to be trying all these things and see how it improves life. Like I say, you get the weight down, get the exercise up, you know, and because I'll be quite honest, there's a lot I want to do with Action Radio. I don't want to leave this, you know, in 5 years or 10 years. I'm looking at 20 to 30 years, you know, between 80 and 90.
Yeah.
And then I might slow down maybe. I mean, I really want to see this in a place where it's a permanent fixture for the world, you know, so that people at any time, you know, from when I'm gone, someone's going to pick up this baton and keep this going. That people can, the idea that people write the laws that they're governed by. This is a revolution that we're starting here, and all you folks are involved with it.
It is.
Whether you like it or not, you know, you're part of the revolution.
Well, I appreciate it.
it's fun.
And I'm going to go, but it's been such a fun morning. Like, y'all are awesome. Pianki, please find my website, message me. If not, I'll put my contact message stuff in the group, and I appreciate y'all for encouraging me and moving forward in all things. So.
Oh, we love your report. We love having you on. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you do.
And, feel free
to reach
out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Y'all have a wonderful morning.
You too.
Yeah,
take
you
care.
Too. And be careful.
I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. So, Chancy Terry, what I love about her, I love her accent. And what I love doing.
Yeah, I do too.
Exactly. In my own little kind of sneaky, sarcastic way, I love having Southern accents on the show because a lot of media tries to breed out the Southern accent. They don't want it. They don't want regional accents. And we have a lot of people, regardless of accent, you know, on the show. And you listen to like the reporters in Atlanta or some major Southern cities, and they're usually from somewhere else. They have the bland, you know, a bland accent from Midwest, Northeast, somewhere in there that doesn't really have an accent. And so the ability, I think, to come on the show with your own accent, you know, and to be able to broadcast that. I mean, I started off with a Canadian one, went to an Australian one, had an American one, you know, New England accent to a sort of like California, like totally awesome. I don't know why I've got like the hybrid now, but it's just really fun. So I wonder what people in different countries think when they hear all the local reporters. And like I say, none of us are professional broadcasters, not even me. You know, I am now, but I mean, I didn't start off my career doing this. You know, this took about 30 years before I could actually do this. So it takes a lot of work. It takes, time to get this. But that's the beauty of the show is that we're not run by, you know, professional program directors, professional, you know, operations directors, you know, a syndicate, a network, everybody telling us what to do. We just do our thing. It's kind of fun.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, I like to listen to people with different accents because you have to pay close attention to what they're saying.
That's a good point.
And rather than it just go through one ear and come out the other. So you have to process it, and it stimulates the brain. But, you know, another thing I was thinking, and I heard you make mention about, you know, that I versed in all the things that I've done in my life. Mm-hmm. That was made possible because I was born in America. Yeah. I don't think there's any place else in the world where I could have been exposed to so much, be able to receive it, participate with it, and also meet so many just great people. So that was a benefit for me. Whatever course of events that happened in history that caused me to be here in America today, United States of America, I am happy it happened.
I'm happy too. And it's interesting when I think about my childhood, a lot of things that came to us in Canada and Australia started in the United States. You know, cars, you know, convertibles, you know, the whole surf thing, the music, you know, the transition from gospel to blues to rock and roll. That's an American invention. and rock and roll, you know, changed the world. The love affair with cars, the innovation, the ability to create things here. Most countries have huge bureaucracies. I'll tell you an example that you probably can relate to, and we haven't really talked about this on the show, and I'm going to take a break in a couple of minutes. Do you remember the Avro Arrow, the Canadian jet that they canceled in 1959? Did we ever talk about that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens when governments take over and ruin things. So for those that don't know, I think Canada really lost it, and then they started down a really horrible path ever since they canceled the Avro Arrow. Avro, I forgot, it started as a British company, but it became Canadian. And I forgot what the acronym Avro, A-V-R-O, what it stands for. But the Canadians came up with the world's finest interceptor aircraft. It was a fighter plane. It was called the Avro Arrow. It was more powerful. It was faster. It did like 2.5 times the speed of sound. It flew higher, did more. It still would be competitive today. And this plane was designed, and it was just about to be built in 1959, and this Prime Minister, John Diefenbaker, canceled it. I think it was paid off by the United States because the United States airplane manufacturers didn't want the competition. What they should have done, the United States should have bought the fighter because it was a brilliant airplane. But Canada, it was nationalist. Okay, all Canadians were – well, not all, but especially those that canceled it. But Canada was proud of this airplane. It was a purely Canadian invention, and it was the world's finest aircraft at the time and would have been for about the next 30 years. Nothing could have touched it. The Arrow was brilliant. And when they canceled that, you know, Canadian pride went down, and they sort of, you know, went into, you know, what everybody does. Then they became more socialist, and the government took over. And once you lose your national pride, you know, the left complains about nationalism because they know it works. You know, that's why Trump is so successful. You know, make America great again. You know, Trump loves America. Everybody knows that. And so when you lose your national pride, when you lose the ability to invent and create, when you do all the things the left wants you to do, which is basically be dependent on government, pay taxes, and die, don't have anything enjoyable. That's why, you know, part of my protest is to have drag races on the show, is to have someone like Chancey Terry, who has, you know, wine, weed, and wellness, you know, alternative to the government, you know, socialist health plan. Of you know, early death. Look at the Russians. They died 50-something. The average Russian male lifespan is, what, 51, 52? You know, because they're depressed and they drink themselves to death. You know, and that's, I'm not just making that up. That's, you know, you can read about it, okay? So there are reasons why socialist countries die younger, because the people are oppressed and miserable. You know, and so the opportunities that you had as an American also helped me as a Canadian Australian, you know, and then as an American, be able to see these things, to be able to see racing cars. You know, I didn't know that NASCAR was the second biggest sport in the country in terms of audience participation. You know, and you know what the biggest one?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the biggest sport in terms of numbers of viewers, of spectators, or the biggest event?
Well,
number one attraction for spectators.
It would have to be soccer.
No, air shows.
Air shows?
More people go to air shows than any other participatory or spectator event. Yeah, because you'll get 50, 60,000 people. You know, look at Oshkosh, 100,000. You know, probably a million people go through Oshkosh in the course of their week-long air shows. You know, we have the Blue Angels here based in Pensacola. You know, the beach from one end to the other is lined up with tens of thousands of people. You know, but for participation for spectator sports, air shows, I think are the number one. I think NASCAR is number two. Then you have your other sports, because most people watch other sports on TV, but you can't watch an air show. You can watch it on TV, but it's not the same. You know, it's not just having an F-18 roar over your head at 20 feet in full afterburner. I'm sorry, that's exciting. You can't duplicate that on a TV. I don't care how good the TV is. It's not the same. You know, you can't duplicate the smell of the gasoline, the rubber, the sound of the engine. You can't duplicate that on TV. It's just not – you got to be there. And I think it's the biggest, you know, and there are other sports too. I mean, you know, football, baseball, you know, they're huge, but they're not the same as air shows and NASCAR. We can look it up. You know, when I get another person to produce here, we will definitely, you know, have our instant research, you know, and we'll do that too. But
St. Louis,
yeah,
over on the east side, we used to go to Midwest International and watch the races. And it was a lot of parks. A lot of racetracks around that area, you know,
uh-huh.
Kansas City International, and we come down here to Atlanta. But that was during our motorcycle riding period of our lives, and we used to have fun, Greg. Some of us be sitting around.
You know, when this becomes a multi-million
in the afternoon.
Yeah.
No, somebody say, hey, let's go to Kansas City. So we go fill our bikes up and ride up to Kansas City.
Well, here's what I'm going to do, though. I am firmly convinced, I've always been convinced, that this will be a multi-million listener show one day, simply because we're breaking new ground. We have the most interesting people. We have the greatest pioneers. We have the activists. You know, if you listen to Jen Clark in Australia and Jennifer Clark in Canada over Monday and Tuesday, you know, we have amazing people that are dedicated to their country, to making it better, and they're dedicated to freedom. This, we are going to change a lot, you know, in terms of what we can do here. And a little side benefit, you know, that's not the main reason. The main reason is to do that, is to leave, you know, something behind so that every citizen, you know, has the means, technology, and ability to write the laws that they consent to be governed by. And people have the ability to share that, to bring that directly to legislators and media and everybody else. So we reverse the process of the special interests, you know, buying their laws from the government, who then enforces it on the people. The people are going to write the laws and elect them into government, and government's then going to, you know, put those laws on the special interests. So that's the whole thing. But as a little sideline, I do intend to make some profit here, and I'm going to get myself a Viper Jet Mark II, and it's a two-seat aerobatic sport jet. It looks like a little military trainer. Does about 500 miles an hour, so about 450 knots. Has a 10,000, you know, foot per minute rate of climb, and you and I are going flying. So I'm going to show up on your doorstep, you know, and say, Yankee, we're going flying. So we're going to have some fun. So we're going to have, you know, adult fun, you know, as opposed to kid fun. And so fun should never end. I firmly believe in that. That's why I have these different things on the show. Anyway, let me get your reaction to that. And then I got to play a little, you know, a couple commercials and some Santa Rosa volunteers. I'll be back for a few minutes to kind of close out this amazing day once again. Pianchi, you want to have some fun? What do you think?
That's what being American, being a human being is all about, having fun.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll be back in just a little bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Papers Number 9 was written by our now familiar friend, Alexander Hamilton, November 21st, 1787. And again, he starts in on how the Constitution is required to keep a firm union, which he defines right in the beginning. A firm union will be of the utmost moment to the peace and liberty of the states, as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection. It is impossible to read the history of the petty republics of Greece and Italy without feeling sensations of horror and disgust at the distractions with which they were continually agitated and at the rapid succession of revolutions by which they were kept in a state of perpetual vibration between the extremes of tyranny and anarchy. Why he compares us to ancient Greece and Italy, which had completely separate city-states like Sparta and Athens, who went to war with each other, as a justification for a strong central government under the new Constitution as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection, where some 73 years later the U.S. had become completely factioned and was in fact in a civil war, is a complete mystery. But he does love that recurring theme. Leaving behind the ancients who screwed up their republics with despots who created tyrannies over the people, Hamilton makes a huge leap to our modern republic and after seeing The Science of Politics has received great improvement, then perfectly describes the way a republic is supposed to be characterized, saying this: the regular distribution of power into distinct departments, the introduction of legislative balances and checks, the institution of courts composed of judges holding their offices during good behavior, the representation of the people in the legislature by deputies of their own election. These are wholly new discoveries, or have made their principal progress towards perfection in modern times. They are means, and powerful means, by which the excellences of a republican government may be retained and its imperfections lessened or avoided. One imperfection that needs immediate addressing is that judges need to be held to good behavior and not the mythical lifetime appointment. The biggest problem with Hamilton is that he likes the adulation he obviously received for bringing into his Federalist Papers so many irrelevant examples of failed governments, and from those false comparisons projected what would happen should the new Constitution not be ratified. This is disingenuous. However, if you look carefully through the long paragraphs of fluff, he has his moments of brilliance. So let me set aside all the philosophers he quotes and the foreign failures that don't apply, and end with a moment of clarity for Hamilton. He says, "The proposed Constitution, so far from implying an abolition of the state governments, makes them constituent parts of the national sovereignty by allowing them a direct representation in the Senate, and leaves in their possession certain exclusive and very important portions of sovereign power. This fully corresponds in every rational import of the terms with the idea of a federal government." Oh, if only the states had retained their direct representation in the Senate, that the income tax were still apportioned by population and paid by the states and not by individuals, and if only our money came from the U.S. Treasury and not the Federal Reserve, maybe we wouldn't be where we are. So maybe the problems with the Constitution are not so much as it was ratified, but much more how it was amended. I'll be considering that prospect a lot more in future Founding Moments. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. And I'm back with my co-host, Pianchi, and we're going to, we got 8 minutes left to kind of hash out whatever else is going on. Pianchi, what do you think? State of the Union message, the fake war in Iraq, I mean, Ukraine, that Iraq, in Ukraine that Brandon's doing his best to get started. But what's on your mind today, or anything else?
Well, I'm not going to watch the State of the Union message. I hope everything goes well with the convoy, with the truckers. And I'm going to be interested to see how they are well received as they travel across the country and also once they reach D.C. And as I stated earlier, I'm really disturbed about how Melania Trump is being treated when she donates to charities and they don't want to accept it. I would like to do some research and maybe have those people on a show.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Why would you do something so demonic? It's selfish. It's selfish because the people are the entity that you are collecting charitables for. Now you're denying them. They don't care who it comes from. They just happy to get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, feel free to bring them on. In fact, you're welcome to bring on any guest anytime. That is not a problem. The truckers' website, the best one, is AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com. And it's more than a way to raise money. It's got the place for media. It's got a place for the truck routes. You got the convoy affiliates. They've got a big thing in the mandates. You can contribute a little Tucker Carlson video. They've got a place to join the convoy, apply for assistance, to volunteer. They take testimonials. You know, they got a speak up and be heard section. They got a petition to sign. And this is the one I'm interested in. Under the About Us, they have a thing that says peaceful expression. It says, we are a movement of peaceful, nonviolent Americans who are dissatisfied with the unscientific, unconstitutional government overreach in regards to mandates. Many truckers and convoys are also participating too. And we've got the points here. Reopen the Keystone Pipeline and reinstate oil and gas production domestically. Reclaim national energy independence. Fight against big tech and government censorship. Secure the southern border. Fight against agricultural regulations that disproportionately affect farmers. Fight against big pharma control over independent liberty. Reinstate liability to pharmaceutical companies for vaccine damage and death. And what I'm trying to do is get three of our bills, and maybe more of them. I've sort of reached out to the truckers already to try and get more of our bills, like the one to – well, I don't have a bill to secure the southern border, but I have a bill that allows for the – well, actually the federal government too, but they won't. But the states and federal – states and local governments to have civil asset forfeiture to seize the property illegally gained from illegal aliens, which, of course, is anything they got while they were here. So we're not enforcing immigration law, which is local criminal civil enforcement, a seizure, civil asset forfeiture. So that's a bill. The one that they have here on fighting against big pharma control over independent liberty and reinstate liability to pharmaceutical companies. Well, the reinstate pharma liability, exactly my bill. That's what it does. Reinstates, you know, full, well, it doesn't reinstate because I don't think they ever had it. But one way they did. No, that's not probably not true. Yeah, they probably did. But it puts full product liability on the vaccine manufacturers. And then one, and the other one they have here, fight against big tech government censorship. We've got a bill to do that. My Section 230 bill, amend Section 230 so that it's impossible to touch anything post on social media or to control search engines without incurring full liability for that action. So I've got the solutions. I'm just trying to get the links put in right there on the website so people can actually see the bills. So I'm still working on that. But that's the website, AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com, if anybody wants to check that out. But the convoy, now the convoy is leaving the day of Brandon's sorry State of the Union speech. That's what I'm calling it. So, yeah, what do you think is going to happen? Any projections on the truckers now that Washington's already, you know, locking – the prisoners are locking themselves behind the gates, you know, the insurrectionists, the criminal – I shouldn't say prisoners, but the criminals are already locking themselves behind Fortress D.C. It's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, the actions that we've seen the last several years has done nothing but divide this nation. And – when you have your back up against the wall, you got to do what you got to do. Now, I think that they're going to do everything that they can to make the event as irrelevant as they possibly can. But, you know, let's hope for the best and see what does happen. You know, America's got the right to protest, peaceful protest, and that's exactly what they're participating in. And I'm just appalled of what I'm seeing going on in Canada. As Candace Owens put out the challenge to Brandon, why come you're not invading Canada for the rights of the people, the human rights, quote unquote, for the people there in Canada, as we talk about doing elsewhere in the world?
Well, you look at the, you know, we got a lot more reason to invade Canada to set Canadians free than we did to go into Iraq. yeah, they had a dictator, you know, but, you know, it's just, but if you, that's what you profess, that, you know, making the world safe for democracy, as we say, you know, that's a really good point. How come we haven't invaded Canada and overthrown the Trudeau government? When you think about it, instead they've congratulated them. Well, here's something Senator Rand Paul pointed this out this morning, that, you know, our own president, not Brandon, but real presidents, they have the same powers. They have the same emergency executive orders. They can shut down the internet. They can close down electricity. They can close down power. They can, you know, put you in your home. They can do all these things. None of which of those powers are legal as far as I'm concerned, because they violate your constitutional rights. And we've talked about that, how you need your constitutional rights, you know, during a crisis the most. In fact, I'll be working on a draft of something I want to send to Jen Clark in Australia today, right after the show, in fact, on an Australian Bill of Rights. And one of the first provisions is going to be, you know, neither, you know, war, you know, pandemic, you know, crisis, you know, natural disaster, crisis real or imagined, will give the government permission to touch any of the rights. You know, and I'll put in the preamble, because rights are needed the most when the government wants to take them away. And there's no crisis that can't be solved while still maintaining constitutional rights. In fact, constitutional rights would have solved the whole COVID thing, you know, within 6 months instead of over 2 years. Anyway, you got about 30 seconds left, Bianca. I'll give it to you. But is there any crisis where rights have, you know, where it would benefit people to have their rights taken away? I can't think of one, quite honestly.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Even up until you breathe your last breath.
Yeah, exactly. So freedom is the natural condition of human beings. Liberty, you know, is our natural state. And the idea of governments using an emergency or our safety or the public interest or any excuse to reduce, you know, infringe upon, make reasonable restrictions, as they say, none of that stuff is constitutional. And I'll leave everybody with this thought. It's when you have an emergency, real or imagined by government. It's when you have when the government says that they want to, you know, just do this for your safety. Your safety is best guaranteed with the protection of your individual rights, especially when there's a crisis. I'll leave you with that. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock, I'll start again, Greg, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And our website here, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our website created by the amazing and recently departed Eric Colley. At writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. That's a monument to my friend. I didn't know him for a huge amount of time, but he was invaluable. First of all, he's invaluable as a friend. And secondly, for what he did for Action Radio and for every citizen to create a website that anybody can use to write the laws they consent to be governed by. So writeyourlaws.com is a monument to my friend, Eric Colley, who really created it. All right. Talk to you tomorrow.